www.voiceamerica.com.
Hey, this is Trish Stratus.
This is Showtime Eric Young.
I'm Sonny DiMorello.
This is WWE Superstar The Miz.
It's me, DDP.
The greatest man that ever lived always liked a good rap, and you're listening to the greatest rap.
Stratisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
You see them now, John. Can't you hear them singing? Can't you hear them singing with me? Brothers and sisters, he's got the whole world in his hand. He's got the whole world in his hand.
Covering all the latest in the WWE.
Oh, did someone not get what they wanted? Oh, that's too bad.
And TNA.
A lot of people around here, well, they consider us a bad influence. And you know what? We're good with that.
Well, not bad meaning bad, but bad meaning good. An influence, as in we are the straws that stir the drink. We're in the position where the ladies want to see us and the fellas want to be us. They want what we have. They want to be where we are. And they're green with envy, just like my drink of choice. With your host,
sing with me, children.
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
Oh my God, it's Taker, 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 Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And her producer, Sir Rocket.
Thank goodness for my believers. They have truly been the wind beneath my wings.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Right here.
Right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you, of course, by our friends over at Wrestling Figure Wednesdays. That's right, YouTube.com/MBG1211. I am, of course, your host, Lindsay Ward, and joining me, as always, is my ever patriotic, in honor of 4th of July producer, Sir Rockin.
I believe in America.
You believe in America. Okay.
I believe in America, even though America lost. But I still believe.
That's okay. Well, you know what? America gave it a good run.
They did. They sort of backed themselves into it. But hey, we're America. We're mediocre. That's what we do.
That's pretty much what we do. But yeah, we have a lot, and I mean a lot, to get into tonight. We have NXT, we have Money in the Bank, we have news. We're going to talk all about, well, some releases, a reinstatement, and, well, a pay-per-view location that's pretty exciting. But before we get into all that, we have the biggest news of all, which is, of course, we have Brian Shields.
We do have Brian Shields, and he's going to be joining us here in just a second. And we have a lot to catch up with him about, because it's been we haven't talked to him this year.
We haven't. No, it's been, what, since September last year? Since
September, October, something like that, since we've had him on. And yeah, it's been a while. We got a lot to catch up with the man.
Well, you know what? Let's catch up with him, because joining us right now, the author of the amazing new book, 30 Years of WrestleMania. You guys probably know him. We've talked to him plenty before. He's a friend of the network, a friend of the show, the wonderful Brian Shields. How are you today?
Hi, how are you? It's great to be back on the show. Thanks for having me.
I'm just wonderful. As I said, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And, well, I just want to kind of talk to you about the book and just kind of jump right into the book because, you know, as we all know, you penned the WWE Encyclopedia, and that is just an absolutely wonderful book. If you haven't gotten it, go check it out. Amazon.com, find booksellers everywhere. But now you've written a second book, which is the 30 Years of WrestleMania, where you guys focused just on WrestleMania.
Yeah, the 30 Years of WrestleMania is a concept that is really, really cool, and it was great for me to be able to work with WWE and DK Publishing again. You know, this is the history of each WrestleMania, really from, you know, both sides of the ring rope, so to speak. I mean, you know, we talk about the matches, we talk about what went on behind the scenes, we talk about, you know, the the goal, so to speak, or the vision that Vince McMahon had in just getting this event off the ground, and the incredible risk that the McMahon family took just to get the first WrestleMania off the ground. And the other reason why, you know, the book is so great is because it really shows, you can see the progression of the company and the progression of WrestleMania with each chapter, which I think people are really going to enjoy.
Oh, it looks like it. I'm sitting here looking at the kind of little, the splash pressure that they put out that you sent me about the book. And it seems so cool, because as you said, there's the history of WrestleMania from both sides. And one of the cool things, at least to me, is that you got to talk to some pretty influential figures in the history of WrestleMania, including Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan. And what was that like? Did you personally get to talk to them, or was that somebody else?
No, I did. The cool part about working with WWE is that, you know, when you need something, they get it for you. And when you're writing a book with them, if you need to speak with somebody, it's made available. And actually, the first person that I interviewed for the book was around this time last year, and that was Linda McMahon. I had the pleasure of actually going to her office in downtown Stamford, Connecticut, and she spent almost 2 hours with me, which I just couldn't believe. I met her and Mr. McMahon for the first time at WrestleMania 25, before the WrestleMania event when the first encyclopedia came out. And it was amazing to me that she remembered meeting me.
Oh, wow.
And,
that's so cool.
You know, it's just kind of one of those things, like, it really, it's amazing the attitude that the McMahon family has, like, when you're working for them and when you're doing work with them, they really feel like you're, you know, part of their family, and it's remarkable. So, to get back to your questions, sorry about that.
No, you're fine.
I mean, to be able to speak with incredible individuals, luminaries, superstars, divas, Hall of Famers, legends, was just unreal. You know, I mean, you're speaking to people that, you know, you've admired for as long as you've watched WWE, professional wrestling, sports entertainment, you know, so it was amazing for me, you know, to be able to speak to so many people. I mean, in the quotes that are in the book, I mean, I interviewed, I don't even know what the final count of people that I interviewed was. I should probably tally that up. But it was really unbelievable. I mean, you're getting direct access. I mean, you know, I was given, thanks to WWE, the access to, you know, backstage at Raw and SmackDown. And it was unbelievable. That's probably the best way to say it.
Did you have a favorite interview? Just curious.
You know, it was, I don't know if I have a favorite, but there were so many that there were times where I was like, wow, I'm interviewing, you know, Bret Hart for now the fourth time, you know,
right,
for this book. I mean, that was unbelievable. You know, when you're talking to the McMahons, when you're talking to someone like Basil DeVito, who has been for so many years a huge part of WWE and the marketing and the branding of WWE and WrestleMania. He was the first marketing person hired to really head up WWE marketing a few months after the first WrestleMania in 1985. So, I mean, a lot of those conversations, it was just unbelievable, you know, to be able to speak to so many different people about so many different things, yet they all found their way in the book. And one of the things that I really like about the book is, you know, there are special tribute sections.
Right.
So there'll be, you know, there are beautiful layouts celebrating The Undertaker and his WrestleMania streak, celebrating Shawn Michaels in the Hall of Fame. And one of the coolest things is that the foreword for the book was actually written by Shawn Michaels.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and that's something where this is going to be a stretch, but I'm going to try and like get it to the point where like we're tag team partners, which I know will be ridiculous, but I mean, even something like that, like when I got the call from WWE that Shawn Michaels was going to be writing the foreword for the book. I mean, it took something that couldn't be any better and somehow raised it another level. So it was really, really very special. And I think that's the biggest thing with the book in general is, you know, 30 years of WrestleMania, this history of each event, you get the idea very quickly from every person that works at WWE to the men and women that I interviewed for the book, just how special this event is. And that's something where it really is a huge honor to be able to say that I wrote the book and that I was able to work with WWE and DK.
Now, you mentioned teaming with Shawn Michaels. I have to know, what would your tag team name be?
Oh, I don't know. You know, there's a part of me that would just go with like the Rockers, but you can't, and the New Rockers didn't work back in the day. So I would have to, the Heartbreak Kid and I would have to brainstorm.
Okay.
And even as I'm saying this during this interview, it just sounds so absurd, like that would ever happen. But yeah, I mean, I would have to come up with a really good name. I mean, one of the cool parts about writing the book is you get to watch everything again.
Right.
And I remember seeing Shawn Michaels for the first time when he and Marty Jannetty were the Midnight Rockers in the AWA.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't see him when he was part of Bill Watts' Mid-South. He also appeared in World Class Championship Wrestling, but I didn't see him at that time. I first saw him AWA Midnight Rockers. So, you know, so when they came to WWE and they made their WrestleMania debut against the Twin Towers at WrestleMania 5, it was just like starting at that point and then seeing all of the incredible things that he accomplished throughout his career and how he was such a revolutionary force in the business was, I mean, it was just amazing. And, you know, and even think of, you know, John Cena, who, you know, who has now, you know, been in WWE for, you know, for more than 12 years. I mean, it was like his first WrestleMania was WrestleMania 20.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it was really cool to be able to now 30 years in, you know, you start watching all of these incredible events again, and you start to see how people really developed, you know, whether they started out in a tag team or they started out as a member of a faction or all of these things. So it was really, it was just another dream come true to be able to write a book like this.
Yeah, no, looking at some of the press shots that you guys have of the book, of just the pages, yeah, you couldn't produce this in a month. I mean,
yeah, so it was one of those things, and I have to tell you, you know, I need to give huge thanks to WWE Steve Canaleo in the consumer products division. I mean, for the opportunity to write the book, and then Mark Carano in talent relations and everyone else in talent relations who were so instrumental in just in scheduling the interviews. It was one of those things where, you know, there are so many times where you're working with WWE and you're reminded in a professional way, not just as a fan, but as a professional way, that there is no off season.
Right.
So, you know, it's amazing to be working with them on a project And, you know, these men and women have so many things going on, and they're fulfilling just request after request for interviews or access to photo archives. The WWE archivist also, I mean, just a huge thank you. The work that he does is unbelievable. And, I mean, getting to go to the WWE warehouse and going through the archives of the company is just unbelievable. So it was one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, we gotta stop now and make sure that we're able to give this the proper production time.
I bet. Now, I have to ask, because, you know, it's not really a secret, but you mentioned the special sections, if I could talk. And one of the sections you mentioned, of course, is about The Undertaker, which his legendary streak, and sadly, The Thing happened this year, which, sorry, I call it The Thing because I just can't bring myself to say it.
She doesn't want to admit that The Undertaker lost at WrestleMania to Paul Heyman's client, Brock Lesnar.
No. I don't like to talk about it.
So what did you think of the streak ending at WrestleMania?
I was in complete shock. I really and there's a part of me that's still kind of in shock. I mean, I really didn't think it was, as a fan, I really didn't think that was ever going to happen. And maybe this is a little bit selfish on my part, as, you know, as a fan, I kind of didn't want it to end. But it was just in shock, and clearly that was most people's reaction was just utter shock and awe that, you know, that took place.
Yeah, I think I heard stories, like, I think Brock Lesnar had said that after it happened, like, you could have heard a pin drop in that arena afterwards. Like, I think he said that, like, he thought his eardrums had busted or something because it was so silent in the arena. Like, everybody was just standing there in complete shock.
I think so. You know, I think so, and I think if you watch the event back on, on TV, but now however you watch it on WWE Network, whether it's TV or a mobile device or a laptop, I always got to remind myself of that. That's completely accurate. I mean, you had, you know, over 75,000 people, pretty much just stunned.
Yeah.
And shocked. And the way, it's actually funny, the way that has been described is similar to how people have described when Bruno Sammartino lost the WWE title to Ivan Koloff at Madison Square Garden for the first time.
Wow.
I mean, even though that was, you know, a smaller venue and not a WrestleMania, but just the comparisons of the shock and awe that consumed the building. People were, you know, from what I was told back then, that it was just complete shock. You could hear a pin drop. People were speechless, motionless. And I think when you look back at WrestleMania 30, I think that's what people felt. And I think you could tell even by the announcers, you know, when you look at the announcers, and I think they were the ones that actually started the standing ovation. I mean, I think you could tell the emotion came over them as well. And, it's something that people will never ever forget, that's for sure.
Oh no, I don't think so either. And you also mentioned the network and how that was launched this year, and it's revolutionary for the WWE and really for the industry as a whole. Because I know tons of people in the TV industry were talking about it, and they've got their eyes on it, and several people are now trying to copy it. What are your thoughts on the network? Do you think it's, you know, do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? Do you subscribe to it? Do you enjoy it?
Oh God, I love it. I love it. I think it's awesome. I think it's so well done. I watch it through my Apple TV, and just the user experience through my Apple TV and, you know, my other shared devices are phenomenal. And as far as the content that's on it, I can't talk about it enough. I mean, I love it. I love being able to watch so many different things, and the new content I think is really cool, like the countdown shows and, you know, these specials, and there are going to be more of these documentary style specials that are coming. And, so I think as a fan, I think it's awesome. I think that it's just a great way to be able to watch not only, you know, sports entertainment and pro wrestling's past, but it's present as well, which is really, I mean, it's amazing. It really is. And I think a lot of people in the entertainment and television industries were and have been looking at it because of WWE's success. I think it's really impressive that within 3 months, I think the network has close to like 700,000. I don't know the exact numbers, but I mean it was almost 700,000 subscribers within like just a few months of launching.
Oh yeah.
So I think that it's just going to get better. I watch it every day. I mean, there's so much great content on the network, and I also like how it's set up and how it's configured, because I do think, you know, this maybe goes back to my days in the video game business, but the user experience is really important.
Right.
I mean, you know, we all know the cliche that content is king, and it totally is. And the content on there, I think, is phenomenal. And I think it's just going to get better because there's just going to be more stuff added to it. But the user experience has to be there. And, so for me, it's been great. And it was a huge, huge help for me in researching and what I needed to do. So again, selfishly, the timing of it worked out for me. So I might be a little biased when, you know, when I say like, oh, I thought it was a great idea when it came out when it did.
Well, we're right there with you. We sing its praises here. I love it. Rock loves it too. Cause it's just, to me, it's just an amazing thing to see and you're right, the user experience is important because, you know, you can have all the content in the world on there, but if you can't find it, well, it doesn't do any good. Now, I have to know,
exactly.
do you have a favorite thing you like to go back and watch?
Oh, God, we haven't spoken in a little while. You guys are hitting me with the hard questions right away.
Sorry?
I love watching old world-class championship wrestling, because we started getting that on Long Island thanks to cable TV, probably like in 1986, something like that. ESPN started airing AWA and world-class. So I love watching that. I was a huge fan of the original ECW, so I love going back in time, especially to like mid-90s ECW. You know, like 94 to, well, now I'm getting late 90s, but like 94 to like 98 ECW, I just, but everything. I love watching that. One of the things that I really like are the Legends of Wrestling roundtable discussions. I really enjoy watching those.
Oh, those are great.
I think they're really well done, and I hope that there are more that are going to be shared. I like Legends House. I thought Legends House was cool. And all of the pay-per-views, like you could go back and watch all of these different pay-per-views, whether it was ECW, you know, WCW and WWE. So there are just so many parts of it. It's really tough for me to pick just one. How about you guys?
Oh, I love to go back and actually watch Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan. That's one of my favorite matches to go back and watch. But it was actually really cool for me because I started watching late. I started watching around 2000. So I was actually 16 or 17 when I started wrestling. So I missed pretty much the entire Attitude Era, like the whole thing. So when everybody talks about, you know, the Zamboni and McMahon versus Austin and all that stuff, I missed all that stuff. I never saw it. So it's cool for me to be able to go back and watch this because, like, one of the very first Raws that they aired when they do the Raw Rewind was the Black Wedding with Stephanie and Taker. And I had never seen that in its entirety. You know, well, I had seen it, but it was really, really bad quality on YouTube. And so to be able to see it in the quality that they air it in full context was really cool for me. But yeah, I love the fact that I can go back and I can watch pretty much the Attitude Era and see that history that had happened in its full context, basically. Because you see the clip moments and it's like, yay, great, that's awesome, it's a clip. But to actually see how it happened is really cool.
Oh, yeah.
But what about you, Rock?
To me, it's the pay-per-views. I'm going back and watching, like, every SummerSlam in order just to, you know, relive all the moments, and some of them I didn't see. It's like, you have all these hours of pay-per-views just to go back to. It's awesome.
So, yeah, I'm definitely with you there. But, so, just out of curiosity, is there a concept or something that maybe you would want to see on the network that they haven't either come up with or aired yet, or...
I hope that we get to see more documentaries. I love the WWE style of documentaries that, you know, really became cemented with their DVD line. I love stuff like that, the behind the scenes stuff, you know, not only the quality of the presentation, but the level of detail that they are getting into and have been getting into for a long time. I mean, I think the first, you know, you go back to some of those early DVD releases, like from 2001, 2002, you know, all the way up through now. They're just so well done. So I hope that there are more of those. I think for me right now, that's what I would like to see. And I love the Countdown Show. Countdown Show is great. I just enjoyed the other day the Divas, like the most dangerous Divas, and it was just an hour of like a great, well done Countdown Show. It was just really, really cool.
I think my favorite was the most shocking moments, and when you had Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins reading Eddie's bedtime stories, and you got their genuine reactions to that. And I love how Seth was like genuinely horrified, and Dean Ambrose was sitting there probably taking notes.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So, but speaking of the Shield and kind of transitioning off the network a little bit, what was your impression of the Shield breakup? Because like you said, we haven't talked in a while and stuff has happened since we last spoke.
Oh, absolutely, to say the least. And it was one of those moments again, similar to the streak ending at WrestleMania, this year, I was in shock. As a fan, I was a huge fan of the Shield. I thought that it was definitely one of the best things that WWE had done in a long time. And it was like every week it was, I felt like every week it was awesome with them. I've always been a huge fan of factions, especially ones that are like just really well done. And those are usually the ones with, you know, anywhere from, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 members at the most. And I thought the Shield was great. I was shocked when that happened. You know, I mean, for me, and this might be showing my age a little bit, and my buddy Mike Johnson actually wrote a great article on PW Insider about when Barry Windham turned on Lex Luger to join the Horsemen.
Right.
And that was kind of how I compared it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because for me, I really didn't see that. I mean, I really didn't see that coming at all. Like, and especially after the great match that they had at the pay-per-view the night before. I mean, it was pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was like, it's one of those moments where you see something coming, and you know they just had this great match against Evolution, and then it's like Seth is back behind Dean and Roman. He's got a chair in his hand, and then just that chair came across Roman's back, and I think everybody was like, oh my God, Seth, no. Because for me, the most surprising thing about that turn was it was Seth that turned. I don't think anybody was expecting him.
Yeah, it was one of the, and there is another reason why that it was very shocking, but it was kind of another example of, you know, of all the things that are read and said and things that are, you know, supposedly rumors or, you know, erroneously reported as news and all this other stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know of anybody that, you know, that said like, oh, well, you know, yeah, that was supposed to happen. You know, that was a shock.
Right.
I mean, if you remember to when that happened, you know, social media was almost completely dominated, I think, by that happening. And that's something that's really impressive. And I think the members of the Shield, you know, I hope that they're proud of that, because it's really a testament to the work that they've done, you know, since debuting in WWE.
Oh yeah, I remember sitting there after Raw, and it was literally, you know, Tumblr exploded and Twitter exploded and Facebook exploded, and just literally the entire online wrestling community just exploded in one moment, and it was funny, and it was sad to watch at the same time, because you don't want to see the Shield break up, but just some of the reactions to the breakup was really, really, really entertaining. And I feel horrible.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, people were, I mean, the range of emotions there were all over the place. And I think, cause even like I was at WrestleMania 29, and you know, they even got, you know, and this, you know, sometimes historically in the Northeast cities, you know, there always seems to be a pocket or two of fans that cheer for the real, like, cool villains.
Right.
And I remember at WrestleMania 29, there was a little bit of a contingent for the Shield. And you know, I remember that, and then I remember watching WrestleMania 30, the reaction that they got, and it was impressive. I mean, to be at that point, they're not even in the company 2 years, And I felt they got a huge reaction at WrestleMania 30, and it just kept growing from there, it seemed like. So, you know, when Seth Rollins turned on the Shield, it was, yeah, it was a shock. And there was, like, if the 10-year-old me saw that, I would have been devastated.
What are you talking about? Adult me was devastated.
it was a huge deal, and it is a huge deal, and I think we're gonna see some really great stuff from each of those guys.
I hope so. I really hope so. And kind of speaking of great stuff and cool factions and whatnot, you know, we have to talk about them because, again, no secret, I'm a fan. But I think the last time you and I had spoken, the Wyatts had just made their debut, or they were getting ready to make their debut. I believe that was the last time we spoke.
They were just...
Yeah, I think they were on the scene for just a little while.
So, having now seen them for almost a year, do you have any impressions on them?
Yes. I think what they're doing is awesome. And I think it's another one of those things similar to the Shield where, you know, to me, it's one of the best things WWE's done in a while, and it's only going to get better. You know, I think during our discussion last time, I used the comparison where Bray, to me at that time, you know, Bray Wyatt had just the presence and the eloquence of, to me at the time, like Robert De Niro's character in Cape Fear,
mm-hmm.
the remake of Cape Fear back then. And, I mean, what they, you know, they're another example of, you know, they just get better like every week. And that build to, WrestleMania, with Bray Wyatt and John Cena, and that moment on Raw where, you know, the children's choir came out. I remember thinking to myself, like, okay, he's now, for me, he's now eclipsed this, there are certain personalities I feel like if you go back in wrestling history that were, you know, they were, you know, frightening and intimidating in a different way as opposed to the, you know, 6'8", you know, 300-pound powerhouse.
Right.
And, you know, so to me, when I think of, like, classic Jake the Snake Roberts, or I think of classic Kevin Sullivan, you know, whether it was in the NWA or Florida, you know, all the great stuff that he did, you know, with this kind of like, you know, this eerie darkness kind of a thing. And they were so great on the microphone. And so to me, when the children's choir came out, that to me, I felt like was another turning point. For the Wyatts, and specifically Bray Wyatt, in just like getting to another level. I mean, I thought it was great. The matches that they're having, I think are also great. And that really makes it all complete. And I think when we're talking about the success of the Shield, and the continued success of the Wyatts, is that it's complete in terms of, you know, a great presence, you know, great skills on the microphone, and then, you know, making it complete in terms of being able to tell great stories in the ring. I mean, even just their entrance. I mean, it's just really well done.
Well, it's funny because it's like when they first when they first started, people I don't think knew how to react to them. And now, almost a year later, their entrance is an experience now. It's like they walk out. And it's funny because we comment on it every week that we watch Raw and SmackDown. And I sit here and it's like the lights. Just the lights that started popping up after WrestleMania and how many you see in every arena they're going to now. And how that's an experience now. If everybody wants to be a part of it. And that's so cool for them that happened. And it's completely natural and organic. Like WWE didn't tell people to start doing it. People just start doing it.
Well, and I think you just touched on something where and we touch on this in the book, 30 Years of WrestleMania, with some of the interviews where, you know, that's historically when you get the best stuff.
Right.
When it's, you know, whether it's the man or woman it's, you know, maybe very close to who they really are in real life, like a Stone Cold Steve Austin, or things are building naturally every week, organically every week now, and that's the stuff that seems to be the best when things are happening and they're being able. They're able to develop that way on their own. And I think the Shield was a great example of that. The Wyatts are and continue to be a great example of that. And I'm really looking, I mean, there's so many things with WWE that I'm looking forward to, this summer through the end of the year, as far as, you know, the different talent. Where so many of these stories and the superstars and divas are going to go. And, you know, the Wyatts are just another great example. And I think to your point as well, Lindsay, I mean, they've come an incredible way in a relatively short amount of time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you have Bray Wyatt obviously transitioning out of John Cena. You know, he had the Money in the Bank match Sunday night. And now, you know, after Raw, you know, everybody was kind of wondering, at least for me, where are they going to go with Bray Wyatt? What are they going to do with Bray Wyatt? And then Chris Jericho shows up last night, or I should say Monday night at this point. And what are your thoughts on, you know, the possibility of a Jericho Bray feud?
Well, in general, to me, I think Chris Jericho is one of those individuals that it's just great when he's back.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and this is someone who, you know, I've enjoyed watching for a long time. I remember first seeing him in the original ECW, in the mid 90s. And, you know, so for me, I'm just always happy when he's back. If there's something, so for me, anybody that he's going to be an opponent of or go against, I'm going to be into. I really enjoyed what he and CM Punk did. And I think, you know, Jericho, Bray Wyatt, that would be great. I mean, again, it's the clash of contexts, you know. I mean, you have, you know, two very strong figures. One is battle tested over time, to say the least. I mean, he's had one of the best, most celebrated careers in the history of the business in Chris Jericho. And you have, you know, someone in Bray Wyatt who has just been doing phenomenal work since his debut. And I mean, I don't see how that could go wrong. Like, I'd watch that anytime gladly.
Oh.
I mean, just the promos alone.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Mean, you know, and that's not even, and it's so funny because they're both great in the ring. So, like, to me, like, the promos would be great. The interview segments would be great. And by the time, I think it might be one of those things that by the time they get in the ring, people may be like more excited than they thought just because the interviews were so good. So yeah, I think that would be a great rivalry for sure.
Absolutely. And you know, that I think that kind of speaks, at least, you know, in terms of like Chris Jericho wanting to come back and work Bray Wyatt, because that's the rumors that he came back specifically to work with Bray Wyatt. You have Triple H possibly working Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. You're having all these great talents, you know, coming back, requesting to work with this new talent. I think that speaks volumes to the new talent and how good they really are, that you have all these people coming back and saying, I want to work this guy. I think
you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. It speaks volumes for these the current superstars, and it also speaks volumes about these, you know, these celebrated veterans. I mean, WWE has always made stars.
Right.
I mean, if you go back to the beginning days of the company in the 60s. That is something that the McMahon family has always done.
Right.
And we're seeing it now. And I think that it's, I mean, even the Triple H Daniel Bryan stuff, I thought was phenomenal. You know, whether it's the Wyatts or members of, you know, former members of the Shield. I mean, the stuff that's going on is very exciting, and I think a lot of these current superstars that are, you know, for some viewed as like newer superstars, they have they're ready. You know, they were. I mean, I feel like when I watch many of them, and I don't want to name names because if I miss any by mistake, I don't want to do anything unintentionally there, but you know, there are so many that when you watch them in the ring, you really feel like not only are they ready, I mean, they've been ready, and you could tell like this is what they've wanted to do their whole life.
Right.
I mean, the quality of the matches, the quality of the interviews and their development over time and telling these stories in the ring and on the microphone is just fantastic. And I mean, you can hear the reactions, and that's one of the cool things with WWE and not having an off season and being a form of live theater is that it's the ultimate focus group.
Right.
You know, whether it's a deafening roar of excitement or approval, or a sea of boos that's just as deafening, or if it's dead silence, that's the test. And it's really exciting to be there, you know, in the crowd, which is always my favorite thing. And yeah, I mean, so we're seeing it, and I think for someone like Chris Jericho to want to come back and work with whoever it may be, it speaks volumes for both of them, because he doesn't have to do that.
Mm-mm.
You know, so I think that it speaks to him as well as a professional and wanting to give back and also to continue working in an industry that he loves. And I think the same is said for Triple H as well. He doesn't need to get back into the ring at this stage of his professional life. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. He's good. He's, you know, he's firmly set as he and Stephanie are the next Vince and Linda, if you will, of this generation. So they're good. He doesn't need to get in the ring, but that's not going to stop him. And I have to applaud him for that. It's like he could say, screw it, I'm done. But you know, the fact that he's worked with, you know, Brian, he's worked with the Shield, and he's going to work with Roman probably, and probably others as well. I think that's so cool of him to do. And
Absolutely. I completely agree. And his documentary, Thy Kingdom Come, was something that I've watched a few times, and that's one of the things that comes out for sure is his natural love for the industry and for wanting to continue and further the art form and grow WWE's business. So I think that's reinforced. That point is reinforced when you see him, you know, trading the very expensive, you know, tailor-made suit of a business executive for his battle gear, so to speak. So yeah, it's a huge deal, and that's the fun part, I think, for all of us as fans, is we get to, you know, sit back and enjoy it and get to talk about it.
Exactly. And speaking of Hunter and Brian, and kind of bring it all back around to WrestleMania, you know, what was your thought on the whole, I don't know what else to call it other than a saga, but the whole Daniel Bryan story that actually stretched from SummerSlam all the way to WrestleMania, where he finally succeeded in winning and keeping the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, you know, at the biggest show of the year, the biggest show in company history. What were your impressions of that?
I loved it. I loved it. I've been a huge admirer of Daniel Bryan's work for a very long time, before he came to WWE. So I was just very happy for him that he was part of this, and just to see the Yes Movement grow to its size has just been phenomenal, and the whole story from, like you said, what started at SummerSlam, you know, some people would say that was, you know, like an old school approach or a classic approach where there was a real slow build to what was just an incredible crescendo, so to speak. I thought that their match at WrestleMania 30 was great. And then for him to beat Triple H the way that he did, to move on to that final match and to defeat Batista and Randy Orton, I thought it was an incredible story. I thought it was a great moment. And it's one of the greatest moments in WWE history, and it should be, it deserves to be. And it's funny, one of my favorite parts of the Triple H match with Daniel Bryan was the relentless, like, Stephanie McMahon
The
outside, reprising her role as the villain manager type in the corner. I mean, she is so good on the microphone and getting the crowd to really have a very strong level of disdain for her. I mean, you could hear her throughout the match.
Mm-hmm.
Just berating Daniel Bryan verbally. And I thought that was a great element, because it's another way where, like, the deck is stacked.
Yep.
And I thought it was great. I thought the Daniel Bryan Triple H match was great, and the way that he went on and that entire story, I thought was great. And it really felt like that became almost like a backdrop for the entire weekend.
Right.
I felt the Daniel Bryan story, as you put it, the saga, and it was phenomenal.
And, you know, speaking of Stephanie, I think a lot of people are going to disagree with me on this, but I adore Stephanie. At least, I'm sure she's a wonderful person, but I love her television character just because she's so good at it. And one of the things I love is when they brought her back to TV after being gone for so long. And she's really become, I think, an MVP over the past, probably 6-7 months, maybe even the past year, especially concerning Daniel Bryan, because she's just kind of come into her own with it. And it's like, you just love to hate her. And it's just, she just added something to that match and to that whole story. And she's continued to add something after the fact, with the unfortunate injury of Daniel Bryan and the fact that they did have to take the title off of him because of that injury. But it's like, Stephanie has done such an amazing job of selling it. Because
I agree with you. I think that she's always been great in front of the camera. And I almost feel like since her return, I feel like in a lot of ways she's really hitting her stride as a performer in terms of really taking what was always viewed as like a great character and a very strong WWE personality. I feel like since her comeback, being on the side of Triple H, being at his side with the Authority, I feel like she's really hitting her stride and doing some of her best work. I really do. And you can hear it in the audience when she comes out. I mean, she doesn't even have to be seen. You could hear the opening of her entrance music. Someone could just say her name. She doesn't even have to be out there yet.
No.
And the just the reaction from the crowd is exactly what you would want if you're that character. And yeah, I really do. I think the stuff with the Authority has been some of her best work.
I think part of it might be that she was always a secondary character before, and now she's the focus, she's in the limelight, so she can really do, I think, a lot more with it. Because before she always seemed to answer to somebody, and now she doesn't answer to anybody, and that might be part of it. That's just me.
Well, that could definitely be a contributing factor. I mean, that I think it always helps. In that kind of a scenario. And I think what also has helped, and this might be more of an indirect factor, is, people have really, fans have grown with her. She now has amassed quite a history with WWE fans. And it's now, the character that people were first introduced to in the Attitude Era of, Daddy's little girl, who then
right.
turns on her father and becomes the billion-dollar princess and all of these things. Now it makes sense, I think, to a lot of people. Like it's quite plausible that now, all these years later, her and her husband are at the helm and they are the Authority. So I think that may be a help as well. It's been great.
I would agree with that. And I can't wait to see more from her and from them in general. Now, kind of start to wrap things up, because I know we've kept you a long time, but since I now consider you an expert on WrestleMania.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
You know what? If anybody writes a book on it, in my opinion, they're officially an expert, which I'm not sure.
Well, I will conveniently, I wholeheartedly agree.
All right. So,
no, thank you very much.
Since you have done masses of research on this, I have to know, in your opinion, what do you think is the most underrated WrestleMania moment?
Underrated WrestleMania moment. Wow. I'm speechless right now. That is not often that I don't have an immediate answer. That is a great question. All your questions are always great, but this one, wow. The most underrated WrestleMania moment. Wow, I really don't know. I really don't. You may have stumped me. WrestleMania has definitely had its fair share of underrated moments. In addition to the almost countless iconic moments, I think what's coming to mind right now is I think when John Cena defeated Big Show at WrestleMania 20 for the United States Championship, I don't think that was necessarily viewed at the time as important as it would end up becoming.
Right. I can see that.
So for me, if today I have to give an answer, which I do, I don't want to get in trouble with you guys.
Oh, come on. You'd never get in trouble with us.
I think that might be, I don't know if it's the most underrated, but I certainly think that it is one of the more underrated moments in the 30 years of WrestleMania.
Okay, I can see that. Now, just for me personally, I've got two more questions, and then I'll let you go, I promise.
No, this is great.
You mentioned that you got to go through the WWE warehouse, which I'm really, really jealous that you got to see, because that had to be amazing. Did you see anything that kind of put that twinkle back in your eye or made you really excited as a fan to see?
Oh, I mean, the front doors. It was just remarkable. I don't know how else to say it. And, you know, I was there several times, thanks to WWE and the WWE archivist. And, and it was one of those things too, where like, I felt like I made it almost awkward. Like they had to like kick me out almost like every single time, you know, that I was there. Like, it's like, I would want to be there. Conveniently, I would want to be there like all day. And they were so great in allowing that. There was one of the cool things that I saw right away. There was a framed photo. It's a huge, huge like poster size, that Liberace signed to Vince and Linda McMahon, thanking them for WrestleMania. And when I saw that, and that was like one of the first things that I saw during my first trip. So when I saw that, I said, wow, and I just thought it was really cool because like Linda McMahon was my first interview.
Right.
To get the interview started. And now I'm back in Connecticut, at the warehouse. And like one of the first things I see is to me what would be in any Hall of Fame, any museum exhibit on entertainment. And it's, you know, the great Liberace signing something, you know, thanking Vince and Linda McMahon for WrestleMania. And I thought, wow, this is a great thing to see in my, you know, first 20 minutes here. And then there's a part of me that's like, well, what else is here?
Right.
You know, and So yeah, that would probably be the first thing, the first thing that came to mind. I mean, they have just so many amazing things, and the WWE archivist just does an incredible job in not only cataloging and preserving, but continuing to add to what they have there. So it's just incredible.
Wow, that would be a cool experience, because I've heard they've got everything, and I mean everything there. Like, they don't get rid of anything.
It's everything that you've heard and more is probably the best way to say it. I mean, it's just, and it's one of those things too where, you know, I think that's another reason why, you're so grateful to be able to work with WWE and DK on these kinds of projects when you grew up a fan, and walking through it, it's just like you just hope that there will one day be a physical Hall of Fame to visit, because the way WWE would do it, it would just be amazing.
I wish they would. They can just sell tickets to go through the warehouse. I'd just go through the warehouse as is just to see what you could see, because, I mean, I've seen the YouTube series that they do online where they have Joey Styles and the archivist going through, and just the stuff you see in the background. It's like, hey, I remember that and that and that. It's just, it's so cool that they have everything there.
Well, and I think, you know, and one of the other special sections in the 30 Years of WrestleMania 30 book is a spread on access. And one of my favorite parts of fan access has always been the Hall of Fame, that, you know, legend stuff that you can just walk through, and the collection of items are just unbelievable. And it's, to me, walking through the warehouse, you know, working with the WWE archivist, is just, you really do, you just hope as a fan, you just hope, like, I hope one day, you know, there will be doors to be opened at a WWE Hall of Fame, because I think the way that WWE would do it would just be phenomenal.
I agree with that 100%. So if you're listening, WWE Physical Hall of Fame, I would fly there. I would run to it when it opens. Uh-huh. But since we're talking about WrestleMania, one last question. Hopefully I don't stump you. For you, what would be the dream WrestleMania match that we've never gotten to see or may never see?
Wow. Well, I would have loved to have seen a Hollywood Hogan Stone Cold Steve Austin main event at WrestleMania. I think that's something that I think a lot of people would be with me on that.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, there's so many great matches that I would have loved to have seen. I'm going to say one. That would be it. I mean, I think that would be the big one. There are some others that I think would come to mind. I mean, I would love to see Sting versus Undertaker. I mean, I was always a huge fan of Sting, and followed his entire career from, you know, his days with Ultimate Warrior. Sting Undertaker, Sting Shawn Michaels, I think at WrestleMania would have been phenomenal.
That would have been.
their, I mean, especially both, you know, both of them in their prime, I think really would have been just an incredible story. But yeah, I think the big main event that people were hoping they would see would be, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Hollywood Hogan. Cause we saw, you know, like we saw Rock and Stone Cold, which, you know, headlined an amazing 3 WrestleManias. We saw Rock Cena, which I thought was very cool. And we saw Rock Hogan. So to me, there's that final piece, to a lot of people would have been, you know, Stone Cold Hogan.
I can agree with you on that. That would have been cool to see.
But I think there are going to be more of these kind of dream scenarios that we're going to think about. I really think in the next, you know, between now and, you know, in the next like 6 to 12 months when the current talent that we are talking about today are even better than they are now. And we're talking about them now the way we are because they're doing outstanding work.
Oh yeah.
And I think that there's going to be more of those kinds of ideas, that are thrown out there. I think between WrestleMania and Survivor Series, I think fans are going to, you know, keep thinking of these dream matches between like team-based stuff and those big WrestleMania moments. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is, and the good thing is they have other things, you know, video games and whatnot, that you can make those dream matches happen.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, Brian, thank you so much for coming on. Definitely appreciate it. It's always fun to talk to you.
Oh, no, thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me on, and being able to talk to you guys is always great, and also just I appreciate you having me on and giving me the opportunity to let your audience know that the 30 years of WrestleMania is being made now. It's in production. It's coming out September 15th, and it is available for pre-order now wherever books are sold. So I'm really looking forward to speaking with you and Rock again and your audience again. And if they want to follow me, they can do so on Twitter at It's Brian Shields. And I'll be talking between now and September about all of the different things leading up to making the book and writing the book and my favorite interviews and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to a fun summer.
Well, I can't wait to follow it, and I can't wait to talk to you again about the book, especially when it comes out, because I can't wait to see it, and I think Rock can't wait either.
I'm looking forward to it, and I already made you one sale for Christmas as the co-host on another show I do. We'll be buying the book for his sister.
Oh, very cool. Thank you very much.
So, we're already paying dividends. So on that note, guys, you're listening to The Rock right here on Wild Talk Radio Network, and we will be right back.
Cause this is my legacy, legacy.
Hey, did you know that CB Radio is all over social media? Well, now you do, bitch asses. We are all over Facebook and Twitter. When it comes to Facebook, it's simple. Just go to facebook.com/cigarettebuttsandbandanas. All one word. It's not that difficult. Go ahead, enter it in your website address, fucking go to it, even search for it if you're really that lazy. Go to Facebook, search up at the top Cigarette Butts and Bandanas. You know, it's not that difficult to find us and like us. Come on, you listen to us every week. Just fucking give us a like. We're all over Twitter, too. Every single one of us is on Twitter. You can follow the show at CB Radio WTR. That's the letter R, you know, Q-R-S. I just can't pronounce it. You know, I'm from Boston. Suit my bitches. After you follow the show, be sure to follow me, the Boston Badass himself, at Mr. Chris Loesch. L-O-E-S-C-H. All one word. That's in case you didn't know how to spell my last name. You can follow Rob Pox, you know, the godfather of extreme, at CB Radio G-O-E. And you can even follow Subway, who actually has got Twitter. He has a smartphone now and is on Twitter. So you can follow him, and hopefully he makes a little bit more sense there than he does on air, at X-Core Subway. Not that difficult, was it, people? Now stay a part of the fun and excitement that happens off the air, just as well as you do on the air, every Saturday night at midnight-ish, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Every Monday night, get caught up with everything that happens on Monday Night Raw with the Raw Post Show. From the big returns...
After 7 long years, finally, The Rock has come back to Monday Night Raw!
To the shocking moment... And the moments that leave you speechless.
I grew up locked in a basement, suffering severe psychological and emotional scarring when my brother set my parents on fire. From there, I shifted around among a series of mental institutions until I was grown, at which point I buried my brother alive. Twice. Since then, I've set a couple of people on fire and abducted various co-workers. Oh, and I, once electrocuted a man's testicles.
It's the Raw Post Show. Monday nights, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Can't catch a WTR program live? Well, we've got three easy ways for you to listen whenever you want. First, listen to the Wild Talk Radio Network on iTunes. Just head over to iTunes and search for Wild Talk Radio Network and subscribe to our feed. Secondly, download the Stitcher Radio app and search for Wild Talk Radio Network. And finally, just visit the archive section right here at wildtalkradio.com and you can download every single episode of all your favorite programs. Best of all, it's free. Keep up to date and spread the word to your friends on how you can be part of the Wild Talk Radio Network listening experience.
Looking for one of the most popular stop-motion animation wrestling shows on the internet today? Then check out Crash Collision Wrestling, created by the one and only Matt Goldberg. He's the director of Terrified and Pope Against All Odds. CCW is a stop-motion animation series featuring WWE and TNA stars, and it also happens to be endorsed by the likes of Elijah Burke, Hulk Hogan, and TNA Knockout Tara.
This is Tara from Impact Wrestling, and for the number one animated wrestling show, make sure you check out Crash Collision Wrestling, or else get slammed by moi.
Check out the show by logging on to youtube.com/mbg1211, and don't forget to like Crash Collision Wrestling on Facebook. Once again, check out Crash Collision Wrestling today.
Because everybody knows, much like Pope, CCW, it's pimping.
What's up? This is WWE Superstar The Miz, and you are listening to Wild Talk Radio Network, and it is awesome.
You
Welcome back to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com. That's right, we are back after that amazing interview with Brian Shields. If you missed it, if you're just joining us, well, you're going to have to wait till probably Saturday to get the archive, but it was awesome to talk to him. And, of course, we are, as always, brought to you by Wrestling Figure Wednesdays, youtube.com/MBG1211. But now, good God, we have so much to get into.
Like, we talked to Brian, and it went almost an hour and 15 minutes. We talked to Brian for it, and we got, like, some news, and stuff happened the last couple of days. And it's like, oh, it's going to be a slow news week. We won't have anything to talk about. Nothing big will happen. It's a holiday week, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be nice and quiet. We'll do the interview with Brian. We'll talk about Money in the Bank. We'll talk NXT. It'll be great. And then, well, stuff happens. So we're going to jump right into the news, brought to you, of course, by PWMania.com. And the biggest and, I think, most bizarre story this week is surrounding one Emma. In the fact that, well, she was arrested on a sixth-degree larceny charge when she accidentally forgot to pay for an iPad mini case at Walmart. She was arrested, mugshotted, printed, the whole deal. And then, well, 2 days later, it comes out, she's been released from WWE.
So right there, you think. Wow, big story. We got to talk about this. And it was $21.
It was $21. It was a sixth-degree misdemeanor. Not even a felony, a misdemeanor. And I kid you not, Rock and I spent like 2 or 3 hours trying to research this to figure it out. Because we know she's here on a work visa.
Yes.
And there are grounds that if you violate the law in the United States, that you can be deported for that violation, but as far as we could find, it didn't stipulate whether it was a felony or a misdemeanor. And so we figured that probably for a misdemeanor, especially since it was all settled out of court, she's got to do 4 hours of community service and pay a fine, I believe.
Pay a fine, do community service, and an online course.
And an online court. So it was all settled out of court. It's all done. It's all taken care of. That she probably wouldn't be deported for that. But then the release came, and it kind of left us scratching our heads. And it was, it's like, well, no, it can't be a deportation issue. It doesn't look, you know.
Because you can't be deported. There can't be a visa issue within 48 hours.
Yeah, no, the government doesn't work that fast, especially on a holiday week.
So it's like that, like everyone was talking about it. Kane Kins mentioned it on Twitter, showed me someone's mention of it on Twitter. It was like, that's not possible. It doesn't add up. Visa doesn't add up in this situation because it's too quick and the government work takes forever. If she got a charge and arrested and it was a felony, it would take probably a month. A misdemeanor probably doesn't hit their system for 6 months. And we're at this point, it's like, okay, she's been released. That's stupid. Why was she released? There has to be something more than that. And we'll get into more of the backstory because the news story changed 2 hours later. As she was rehired 2 hours later. Basically, reinstated, I should say, is the best term. Reinstated 2 hours later.
Yes, reinstated 2 hours later, which is kind of weird. I mean, it's like first they made the announcement, the public announcement that she had been fired. We've been trying to figure it out, trying to, you know, rack our brains. Like I said, it wasn't a deportation issue. It wasn't a budget cut. And, you know, as the best we could tell is it was probably something that the crime happened in the McMahon's backyard, which you never want. And she's, you know, I like her, and she's probably very well liked backstage, but she probably doesn't have a lot of people on her side.
No, she doesn't. She's fallen out of favor with Vince McMahon, and once you lose Vince McMahon, you gotta earn his respect back for whatever reason he doesn't have it, because he holds all the divas to the standard of AJ Lee and the Bella Twins. Because Vince McMahon really likes those three women.
Okay.
That's, you know, how that, because, you know, because say what you want about the Bella Twins, they handle themselves very well in the public eye.
For the most part, yes. Yes, they do.
They represent the company very well.
They have become very good spokeswomen for the company. I would agree with that 100%. AJ Lee is another one that she handles herself very well. She doesn't create a lot of controversy. You know, as far as I've ever heard, she's never created any problems for them.
Right.
So I can understand that. But yeah, and it was just something of, it was really bizarre, and there was a huge backlash online. I mean, Tumblr and Facebook and Twitter, and everything was blowing up about this, and everybody was pissed off and angry and upset. And like 2 hours later, Emma got reinstated. And honestly, I would have to say, I'm kind of curious to know if it wasn't the online backlash that got her reinstated, because pretty much everybody called bullshit on WWE because there are talents that have committed far worse crimes. Jack Swagger, no offense, I'm looking at you.
And that was the big thing. People were bringing that up. People were digging up the back history of what's gone on, and that's what happened. They saw the backlash. They didn't want more of more people questioning what they did, to the point of, well, you kept these people, and she only did something this, and it's like, why did they fire her? That's still not, like, that has never been determined. Why exactly did they fire her? We assume why she was fired was over the Walmart thing, which I'll get into in a second, because there's a lot there. And I mean a lot. And was that the final straw? But we'll never know that true story. We assume it's that, and that's probably what it was.
Right.
That being said, going on to the Walmart thing. All right, here's what I know, and this is not—it's not really reported, but this is what I know. Every month, as everyone's very aware, there's quotas that need to be filled by cops. And well, for Walmart, they have a quota of trying to get people arrested. It was June 30th. The reason why she was arrested was to fill the quota. Usually when it happens, people who forget to scan an item, they stop you, they let you know, you forgot to pay this, pay it. What they did is, they called the cops, she got arrested, mugshot, everything as Lindsay mentioned. It was to fill a quota. That's what it was. That's what a department guy, basically, who handles that sort of thing at a Walmart. Not that particular Walmart, but a Walmart pretty much has come out and said. So
yeah, and it's also something of maybe she got recognized, maybe people realized, because it's obviously, you know, they would have asked for her identification, and she would have had to present her work visa and prove that she was here legally. And they probably would have seen WWE on the work visa, and it's, hey, this person works for WWE, let's take him in, because that's going to make news. And it did, it blew up. I mean, TMZ grabbed her mugshot, they had it out online for everybody to see, and yeah, I mean, this is just something of, it's like, I don't understand why she got arrested in the first place, beyond they had to fill the quota. It's like, it's a $21 item. It's something of, oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot to pay for this. Please allow me to make it up and pay for it. It's not something of they intentionally caught her sneaking out with it. It's something of she went to the self-checkout. She checked out. And she walked out with it and probably didn't realize that she still had it. I've done that before. I've had that happen. I've actually gone through the checkout line and have left stuff in the cart and haven't even thought about it sometimes until you get to the door and then you look down and you realize, oh crap, this is still in here. And I just put it back before I left the store.
Right.
So I've done that. I know it's, you know, it's just something of you're distracted, you've got something else on your mind, you're not really thinking or looking, and it just, it happens. It's not like she intentionally walked in there, grabbed the case, and left.
She bought other things. That's the thing. And again, this is what the person who works for Walmart when it handles these type of cases goes. When people steal, they're just not stealing one item. They're stealing multiple items. They forget to pay for multiple things. And that's the thing. It's like, could it be possible she stole it? Yeah. Did she? Hell no. Because of the simple fact that she admitted she forgot to pay for it after the fact because they arrested her. It's like, but that's the thing. They arrested her. There's no reason for the arrest.
Yeah, it's a $21 item. I told you last night, they wasted more money arresting her and sending her through the system than what the item was worth. I mean, that's the thing, is it's like, to call the cops out, to have them holler in, to do the mugshot, to do the processing, to cut the deal, to do all of that, you're talking, you know, thousands upon thousands of dollars of community money, of taxpayer money, to do that. For a $21 item. It's like, again, that could have been handled completely in the store, and nobody had to be hauled away in handcuffs. But the police decided, hey, let's be dicks today. Or, hey, I need to fill my quota, so I'm sorry, you're going to have to come downtown. Like, that's just, you know, it's like, you don't have anything better to do?
Pretty much, yeah. I just think the whole thing is stupid. I went to Walmart today, and at least here they changed how the self-checkout is set up. Now it's like a barricade. It used to be like, oh, here's a straight line to go out. Now they actually made it into a barricade, which is odd. I guess that makes more easier for people to, you know, get caught. It's just, I don't know. It's a ridiculous story, and for all the backlash, it's like, she didn't do anything wrong. I get, oh, she's not in the favor, and people don't like her, whatever. Come on now, give the girl a chance. Like, that's the thing. And she told the story. Maybe WWE didn't believe her story, and that's why she was fired. Who knows? But it's a simple thing. Will she be in the doghouse? Yeah. Why? Because that's how the wrestling business goes.
Yeah. So it's like I said, it's definitely the most bizarre and interesting story of the week. You know, the fact that she got released and reinstated all within a stretch of 2 hours, but Emma is reinstated. Now, what happens to her on WWTV? Well, we don't know, because WWE did come out and say she was going to be punished.
Yes.
By the company. They did say that, you know, it's like, all right, well, we're not going to fire her because it's not a fully fireable offense, especially, you know, the fact that it's a double standard and we kind of look like hypocrites, but we're still going to punish her. So what that's going to do for her career, what that's going to do in terms of any push that she might have had, that I don't know. And if she's on the bad side of Vince, well,
kiss his ass.
Yeah. Yeah, you may have to do more than that, honey, and I'm so sorry to have to tell you that, but yeah.
You may be joining the Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club.
Exactly, but you know what? Emma wasn't the only one that was released.
No.
Which was the only one that was reinstated.
Only one to reinstate, yeah.
It came out, I think, last week, after we had gone to air.
We didn't do a show last week.
We didn't do a show last week, but, you know, like 2 weeks ago, sorry, because, you know, last week I was moving.
Yeah, it happened actually when you were in the air.
Yeah, it happened when I was in the air. I was on my way back to Atlanta from Utah for good, and I land, and the next day I find out, well, Josh Matthews got released.
Yeah, because of budget cuts. He was a cost-cutting casualty, which is surprising because he's been the face of the WWE Network for all their live programming that they've been doing with the backstage pass, the pre-shows and the post-shows and stuff like that. He's been the face of the entire thing, and it's like, he's been very well liked, he's been around for over a decade now, and that one caught me by surprise.
It was a little surprising, but it wasn't, because they have an overabundance of announcers, and you have... They've kind of hit a cash cow in Renee Young.
Which we got to get into in a minute.
Which we have to get into in a minute. But they also had the likes of Byron Saxton and the other dude whose name escapes me right now.
Tom Phillips. Yeah. And there's another guy down in NXT that they're working with, but yeah.
Yeah, and there's another guy down in NXT that they're working with. You have Alex Riley now doing commentary. You have Booker T doing commentary. You have Jason Albert doing commentary. Even William Regal does it from time to time. So you have kind of a slew of commentators, and that's not even including, you know, JBL King and Michael Cole, who are your staples on Monday night and Friday night. So it's like you have all these commentators. You have Josh Matthews, and I love Josh Matthews. I think he's entertaining as crap on, like, the Are You Serious shows. When they just kind of let him go and let him do their own thing, he's really entertaining. But, you know, it's like when they try and script him, I don't know what happens. But he's just, like, very stiff and very... not as much fun.
No, but when he gets to be himself, he's very good. He was very good. He was the announcer for SmackDown. I thought him and JBL had some great chemistry before they brought Michael Cole back into it. It's a shame he's gone, but he'll land on his feet. He'll find work elsewhere. But again, it was one of those cost-cutting moves.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate, and it's something of they've actually kind of cut the pre-show and the post-show a little bit in general, because of obviously budgets, and, you know, obviously the person that took over for Josh Matthews was Renee Young.
Sort of. On the Raw pre-show this week, it is now the new pre-show host is Byron Saxton. He will be now the guy who does the show in studio, because they're keeping them in Titan Towers now, not actually bringing them on the road. So he'll be doing that from Titan Towers with Booker T and Alex Riley. And Renee Young, now, she did the pre-show on the pay-per-view, which means now that Byron Saxton has moved from being at Raw to the Tower, someone needs to fill a slot at TV on Monday nights when they tape a certain show called Superstars. That's where you introduce the new commentator for WWE Superstars, Renee Young.
I'm okay with this.
She is the first full-time female commentator in more than a decade. All right, that statement sounds like there was someone before her. I don't remember any other female commentator before her.
Didn't Sherry Martel do it for a while?
I asked Tim, and he's like, this is a first for Renee Young. It's first. It's historic with Renee Young. That's what I thought. I thought it was Renee Young. But the way they worded, it's like, did someone else do commentary? So if anyone out there can give me some help, tweet us, chat us, whatever. Because I've been racking my brain and I couldn't dig it up.
Yeah, I can't think of anybody beyond, you know, the odd diva or whatever who used to do commentary for, like, part of the show. But, yeah, as far as I know, she's the first full-on female commentator, and I think that's really cool.
It is. Michael Cole said, who's been a mentor to the new crop announcers, when Renee first started the company and she started working with us, one of the things she told me is she wanted to be a trailblazer. Cole said, we started working with Renee in the announcing booth at NXT about 6 months ago, and she really showed some promise. And we have the opportunity now to bring her on to the big level, and she becomes one of the only females in history of WWE to be a full-time announcer at ringside.
Unless they're also maybe, adding Lillian Garcia to that?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Cole continued, Renee can tell some unique stories from the female point of view, and we have to remember that in WWE, our audience is 40% female. I'm a 47-year-old man, and when Randy Orton comes to the ring, you're getting my perspective on it, but what are women thinking? What's going through their mind? What are they looking at? Don't even... Renee is going to be able to give that perspective, which is really, really unique, and it's really never been done before. Now you can go.
What are we looking at? What do you think we're looking at, Cole? There's a half-naked or pretty much naked man in the ring. What do you think we're looking at? Everything. As far as what we're thinking, it's...
which is what Renee's thinking too.
Yes, so congratulations to Renee Young. Super excited. Now I have a reason to watch Superstars. And she has been showing a lot of promise. I love it when they have her on NXT and they have her and Regal together.
Yeah.
Renee Young and William Regal are magic.
Triple H said it has nothing to do with her being a female or not. It has something has to do with her being the right person for the job. She's got a great voice that cuts through the clutter. She's very knowledgeable about WWE, about its history, and about talent. She's really, really, really willing to step up and do her homework.
Hey, you know what? Again, all for it. Totally, 100% all for it.
Lita did some soul commentary when recovering from neck surgery on Heat. That would count. That would be over a decade ago. So there you go. Thanks, Kinkins. So Lita was the last person to actually do commentary. And that was for an extended period of time. So there you go. Lita was the last person.
Okay, that makes sense. But Renee Young's going to be kind of the first non-wrestling talent.
Non-wrestling talent, and she will be full-time. Not just because of injury. She's full-time.
I'm okay with this. I'm completely, totally okay with this. But, you know, well, maybe they can find someone to join her since, well, it seems, you know, if you miss Money in the Bank, you didn't hear this, this is about a week old, but Wade Barrett got injured again.
Oh, no.
At the SmackDown tapings right before Money in the Bank, like literally 2 or 3 days... Or no, I'm sorry, 4 or 5 days. Think of when SmackDown tapes, not when it airs, Lindsay. Wade Barrett got jumped by Jack Swagger, and Jack Swagger threw him into a wall. And, well, Wade Barrett suffered a separated shoulder.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news!
Pretty much. So Barrett's going to be out, what, 3 to 6 months?
Something like that. He had shoulder surgery. And it was not pretty.
I love Wade, but oh my god, he has the worst luck when it comes to, like, Money in the Bank. Because didn't he hurt his elbow really bad right before Money in the Bank a couple years ago?
Oh, I think that was... Wasn't that right before WrestleMania?
Maybe it was right before WrestleMania, but he was, like... He was slated to win Money in the Bank that year. I know he was. And then he hurt his elbow and they had to take him out of contention because I think that was the year Sandow won.
I remember him getting tossed out of a battle royal.
Yeah, and he hurt his elbow and he yelled fuck about 20 times.
Yeah, that was on Raw before WrestleMania. I am semi-positive. The following night, Raw, Barrett suffered a partially dislocated elbow after Big Show threw Dolph Ziggler at him during a battle royal and was taken off of television. That was right after Elimination Chamber in 2012. And he didn't come back until after, till September of that year.
Yeah, he was out for a while, and he's going to be out for a while on this one. So, you know, it's unfortunate, and I hate to see that Wade's hurt because... You know, it honestly sucks, but what else can you do? I hope they find something for him to do, and he's just not off TV for, like, 3 to 6 months, like, have him do backstage stuff or something.
It's a shame they cut down production costs and not bringing his platform. I guess the platform's going back on another truck, because they need it again. But, yeah, he had successful shoulder surgery. It's something that had to... do something with the collarbone. Yeah, he's going to be out for a while, so they had to strip him of the Intercontinental Championship, and there will be a new champion crowned at Battleground.
Yeah, there was no delay in that happening either. It was just like, at Money in the Bank, they said that title was vacated, so it's like, okay.
Yeah, they said a while, he's like, yep, gone. He's out. He'll be gone. They knew that, see, it was not like Daniel Bryan, they actually knew he's going to be gone for a while.
Yeah. So they acted on it, and they announced that there will be a battle royal to determine the new Intercontinental Champion, and it's really kind of up in the air at this point. Anybody could get it.
Only if they believe.
Yeah, he's not going to get it.
Hey, you never know.
You never know, but I seriously doubt the head Bo Lever will get it.
We're going to be talking about Bo in a little bit. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we are. That's special little snowflake. Changing gears, we're going to talk a little bit about TNA, because TNA had some massive news coming out this week, or last week, I forget which week it was. They've all kind of blurred together at this point. In which they announced that the Bound for Glory location will be in Tokyo, Japan.
Yeah, on October 12th, TNA will present Bound for Glory 2014, and their biggest show of the year is going over to Japan. And I am excited for this. It'll be a combined deal with Wrestle 1. When it airs in the United States, it's really, really up for grabs at this point. They haven't announced when it will actually air. If it's going to air live, rather. Because it will air on our 12th, probably. But they have not said if it will air the night before live. And then taped late or whatever. But they're taping it. It's going to be in Japan. It sounds like it'd be cool. They're going to a building that holds about 1,500 to 2,000 people, and they should draw a pretty good crowd. It should be a nice, small, intimate environment that should make for a very fun night, especially for the biggest show of the year. I'm jazzed for it. When I heard the announcement, I was like, yeah, this is going to be cool.
They should definitely have a different crowd. They should definitely have a really hot crowd, because Japan doesn't get a lot of international wrestling. And so, especially if it's in conjunction with Wrestle 1, yeah, they should have a really nice crowd. This should be a cool thing to see.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be a cool show. Who knows who will be in the main events, which we'll find out in the coming weeks and months ahead. But it's like, yeah, good show, good idea. Take your show to a new location. Everyone's like, why not the UK? UK, TNA works with a certain group in the UK, and they book one tour a year. Because mm-hmm. That's how much they can afford. So, this is basically, I don't know, the best way to put it, TNA's not handling all the production for this show. They're sending their talent, they're covering the talent's costs, which one, that saves them a little bit of money, but the promotion side, that's in Japan, that's Wrestle 1, it's sort of a win-win for both sides.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. So, best of luck to them. Definitely looking forward to seeing how that all plays out in the future. And we're going to have more TNA news as the shows progress.
Yeah, there was a couple other TNA news items that came out today. One comes from the TV show tonight, since we can't fully cover it because of the interview with Brian Shields. There's a brand new Knockouts champion in Gail Kim.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gail Kim beat Angelina Love tonight on Impact. Used Eat Defeat to win the championship. Once again, Gail Kim holds the gold. Bobby Lashley retained the TNA World Heavyweight Championship on the show against Eric Young. God damn it.
Curse is foiled again, and well, Kurt Angle made an announcement.
He did.
Concerning the TV title.
The title that we haven't seen in forever because it got taken to the abyss. Well, the TNA TV title is no more, has been retired because, well, I guess people have been clamoring for its return.
Well, that title was always something of, it was rarely defended, it was pretty much a TV title that I believe Booker T originally created, and then it got kind of transformed into the TV title over time, because I know the belt was the belt that Booker brought in.
Which was, what the hell was it called, the Global something or other?
Yeah, the Global Championship or something like that, and then it got converted to the TV title. And I think it was a title in between that, too. And then it was like the TV title was kind of like the U.S. title or the IC title for TNA, where it was always a joke and never really got defended. It didn't really mean anything. And so they finally just put it on Abyss, and you had Abyss take it to the Abyss, where it was never seen from again. And it was always assumed that that title had been retired, but they had kept it up on their website. They still listed Abyss as their champion, so now the title has been officially retired by TNA.
Alright, chat room goes, it went from Legends title to Global title TV title.
Yeah, there we go. That makes sense.
Booker was the Legends champion, which he won it. He debuted it in Vegas. And then it went from Legends to Global to TV. And, yeah. That belt was special. to say the least. So.
Which is a shame because I always thought it was an attractive belt. It was actually one of their nicer ones.
It was a unique belt, I thought, but... Sorry, belt.
Sorry, you're retired. Go collect Social Security or something. I don't know. But anyway, I think that does it for all the news for now.
Yeah, that does do it for all the news. Apparently, also, TNA World Tag Team Champions were also in line, as well, Edwards and Richards retain the gold.
Go them
against the Knox and the Freak, and Dima Ion and Jesse Godders.
I guess that means we have to give a horn, doesn't it?
And when we come back...
When we come back, we're going to be talking all about tonight's exciting WWE NXT. And then later in the show, we're going to be, of course, reviewing and talking all about Money in the Bank. So you don't want to miss that. You're listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we will be right back.
I'll never see any side of heaven. A blaze in hell. It doesn't matter what you think I'm supposed to be, because I myself know all too well.
You never know what will happen when you tune in to CB Radio.
Oh, that's right. Oh, the show was just recently.
It was this past Sunday. A plug into a segue.
Hey, wait. Give me a minute. I got another call. Give me a minute. I'll be right back.
Really?
Come on, no. Man.
Tell us how you really feel, Rob.
Like, if I was driving right now, I'd probably wreck into a tree. Everybody just stop what they're doing, and we'll just have to wait.
Los Matadores versus the Real American.
Going with that. Never mind, sorry. We're not making I seen him too in action, and I was like all excited. Oh, that's so funny. Not that I didn't expect that.
No.
Somehow.
No. As luck would have it, I believe Los Matadores won.
Yep, and see, if I'd seen him face a couple of Mexican guys on main event, and they were pretty good, I would have picked him if I had seen him. I would have. They were Tito Santanas. That's what they were. They're the new Tito Santanas.
New tweet posted live on CB Radio. Subway picking an event that already happened. Let's see how he does. Can't be worse.
But I mean, I was going to make picks. I've already made picks on. I bet you my picks would have been different, too.
All right. The team's titles on the line. AJ Lee versus Free Bella. Who do you pick?
Oh, I picked Free Bella. I do remember that.
You do? Free Bella lost the match, but Ace and Rob picked three. Sub, you picked AJ Lee.
Oh, my God! You can't work it out! I think you changed to Cancer Rock. Oh, shit. Well, that's one for me, because I'm sticking to my original pick.
Jay was completely in the garbage. Thank you.
I told you, I'm my own worst enemy.
I'm coming. Just like, bump my HP up to like almost full health now.
Tune in to CB Radio, Saturdays, midnight Eastern Time. On the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Looking for the latest in all things TNA Wrestling? Then look no further than TNAsylum.com. TNA Asylum keeps you up to date on all the happenings in TNA Wrestling, along with featured columns, full coverage of TNA-related events, and the first look on the behind-the-scenes events of TNA that you can't find anywhere else. Log on right now to the haven for TNA fans, TNAsylum.com.
Oh,
Hey, this is Chris Jericho, and you're listening to Wild Talk Radio. Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
Here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you, of course, by our friends over at Wrestling Figure Wednesdays. That's right, YouTube.com/MBG1211 for all your action figure needs. And you know what, King Kittens? I tried to believe in the horn. I tried to give you the horn, but you know what? Mr. Producer Man over there doesn't want to give you the horn. And if you keep complaining about not getting the horn, I'm going to remind him of your oh-so-fabulous love of Greece.
All right, fine. Should we give him the horn?
Give him the horn so he'll shut up.
Oops, wrong horn. Anyway, let's get into some NXT, shall we?
Let's get into NXT, because, yeah, there's going to be a delay, and he can yell at us later.
So what happened on NXT tonight?
Well, stuff happened on NXT.
Like what?
Like, give me a second install, because I have to find the results.
Your opening contest of the evening, Colin Cassidy with Enzo Amore, took on Sylvester Laforte. This one was quick.
This was very quick, but Amore and Cassidy, we finally got to see them together. They cut a really nice promo.
They did. LaForte had someone, I forget his name, I couldn't get it down quick enough. They cut a promo in retort to Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore. The match itself, it's like, LaForte tried, but he just got destroyed by Big Cass. He hit the East River Crossing and the Empire Elbow, and Cassidy made LaForte, well, go bye-bye at that point.
Yeah, he kind of went bye-bye, and, well, Big Cass picks up the victory in your opening contest of the evening. We then moved on, because I don't believe there was any backstage segment. To your next contest.
No, there was. There was a couple extra things. We had Adrian Neville for an interview.
We did.
Yeah, Adrian Neville was a big fan of, has been a big fan of RVD, and then Tyler Breeze walked in. Yes, Tyler Breeze. Breeze said he was impressed, says he was surprised that Neville was actually able to stay focused, but he knows it's got to be killing him, not knowing when I'm going to cash in. And, well, the champ is like, no, it's not. We go tonight. Go right here, right now. Title or no title, I want you in the ring. Tyler Breeze is like, I would love to do it, but, well, here's the thing. He suffered a career-threatening injury, Lindsay.
Oh, no.
He hurt his finger with doing some hand modeling.
Oh, dear. Somebody get him an ice pack, quick.
It was all bandaged up. He had a brace on it and stuff. You know, poor Tyler Breeze. So,
he needs a hug.
So Neville gets to live for another day because of this career-threatening injury.
We did got a video package for Bull Dempsey.
All right, can I talk about this really quick?
Go for it.
Because I don't think we've done an episode since Bull Dempsey's been on, have we?
No, we haven't.
All right, so I did some research. I think he was on last week, and I did some research. He faced the Woods and Destroyed Woods. I found out who he was, and I was like, now it makes sense. He's the white version of Taz because, well, he went to Taz's finishing school. He tries to talk like Taz, tries to wrestle a little bit like Taz. He's the same size as Taz, just a little bit bigger. I mean, bigger as in bulkier. And it's like, dude, Stop trying to be Taz. You're not Taz. You're not the white Taz. We don't need a white Taz. You're definitely not him. They're trying to make him out to be something. I'm not all hyped on Bill Dempsey. He just doesn't do anything for me. Again, when I heard him talk last week, he sounded like Taz, the white version.
I need to see more of him before I can determine whether I like him or not. So I'm willing to give him a chance. I just need to see a little bit more of him first. But I know one thing he does need to fix right away, honey. That singlet needs to come up and cover your belly button. It will look so much better. Better just go to trunks. You know?
Still would
need. Because honestly, it looks like he's wearing suspenders.
Yeah.
So, up next, you had your second contest of the evening in which the BFFs, Sasha Banks and Charlotte, are putting their differences aside so they can take on Bayley and her new Bayley friend for life, Becky Lynch.
It's Bayley. She's awesome.
She's adorable.
She is. This was a good match. Yeah, both women are really battling for control. Bayley attempted to work over Sasha, but Sasha got Becky into the BFF corner. Becky, at one point, had a nice bridge out of a pin fall attempt by Charlotte, which was really nice. Becky and Bayley, it's hard to say really fast multiple times, worked well together, I thought, early on.
They did. They really did. They're a really nice team.
They are a really nice team. The BFFs took control. They distracted Bayley on the outside and attacked her with a baseball slide. The BFFs spent a lot of time double-teaming Bayley in this match. They really worked her over. But you could see throughout there's just a little... Something wasn't right with the BFFs, and we'll get to that. Bayley was able to escape a double-team and had the BFFs collide a couple times before making the hot tag. And Becky, when she came out of that corner with the hot tag, man, she came out firing uppercut, clotheslines, multiple clotheslines, a dropkick, multiple leg drops too. Bayley and Charlotte went at it. Charlotte dumped Bayley out of the ring. Charlotte gets the tag in, takes out the knee of Becky, hits bow down to the queen for the win. Your winners, the BFFs.
And while Bayley and Becky put up a fight, it just wasn't enough.
It really wasn't enough.
But yeah, there were definitely some tension between Sasha and Charlotte. Things are not happy in BFF land, that's for sure.
That is for sure. After the match, Charlotte walked up as Sasha celebrated. Bayley attacked Sasha from behind, tossed her out of the ring, and Charlotte was just continuing her walk. So that was interesting.
Didn't even help her BFF. I mean, good God. Hmm. But speaking of BFFs, well, we might have an alliance forming in the fact that Devon Taylor was backstage with one Justin Gabriel. And she asked him what his mindset was going into his match tonight against Sami Zayn. Gabriel says that he reminds him of, you know, Zayn reminds Gabriel of himself. Tyson Kidd then walked up and said that Gabriel is heading out to purgatory and he doesn't even know it. Fact. He tells Gabriel he has a way out. And it's by putting the boot to everyone rising up. Gabriel says he's wrong and he will prove it by beating Zayn. Okay, TJ, honey, the fact thing needs to stop. You're having way too much fun with that.
Oh, I know. Anyway, continue.
Anyway, back from commercial, we see Sasha and Charlotte. They're backstage. Charlotte says she doesn't think they should be a tag team anymore.
Aww.
And she wants to be on her own. Sasha, you know, doesn't take too kindly to that. She gets a little angry and, you know, asks if it's about Summer. Charlotte says no, but she can't trust anyone. And Sasha says that her and Summer got along fine before Charlotte and tells her that Bayley and Summer are going to fight to find the number one contender. And she tells Charlotte, good luck. Oh, good Lord. after this, we see CJ Parker making his entrance. He's got a new theme. He's got a whole new attitude. Same man panties.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's what they remind me of. That's what it looks like. He's wearing man panties with a belt.
I was going to say, with a belt. Is it his chastity belt?
I don't know. I don't want to think about that. But yeah, so your next contest is CJ Parker taking on Steve Cutler. This was quick. This was painless. CJ Parker picked up the victory.
Yeah, pretty much. He hit the heel kick for the win. Simple, to the point. CJ Parker wins.
Yes, so...
Then he started talking, though, after the match. And, well, he just doesn't like Xavier Woods.
He really doesn't like Xavier Woods, which I have to ask, who doesn't like Xavier Woods? I mean, he's awesome.
He's this close to being a doctor. No, this close. And then he, somehow turned into a funkadactyl, according to Xavier Woods. CJ Parker, rather. Says Woods had the opportunity. He says if he had the opportunity Woods had, he would actually have won titles, made a name for himself, and changed the world along the way. Basically says he wants what Woods has and needs it, and he's coming for Woods.
Oh my.
Yeah. Pretty
well,
much.
Woods better watch his back.
He better. He better.
Oh my goodness. After this we have the Renee Young backstage. She's with one Tyson Kidd.
Yeah, Tyson Kidd and Renee Young were talking.
Really? You didn't hit the button?
No, because
really?
Not yet. There's plenty of time.
Maybe so. The opening to hit the button, you didn't even hit the button. There you go.
Tyson Kidd, Renee Young said Tyson was open to ask anything. Says his mind, she asked him about why he didn't shake Neville's hand. His mind wasn't there after the match. He was all confused and stuff. And, she then asked about the fallout. He wasn't in the mood to do a fallout post-show and knew he would say wouldn't say the right thing. He only did it for Natty. He would only never blow off his wife. 30 won the championship and was glad his wife pointed out that his foot was on the ropes. Because it was, when he grabbed the chair, he saw red. He was glad his wife was there to snap him out of it, of what he was going through. So it's like, okay, he's sort of, okay, being a pussy at this point. She then she got us a tight title match, and his head and heart weren't into it, and those, again, were. He only did it again for his wife. I did it for my wife.
I did it for The Rock. I did it for the people.
Thank you. Talks about people calling him a baby. His wife is his entire world. Says everyone can think what they want. Natty and him are married. He is Natty's husband. He's not living in his wife's shadow. They are equals. Renee asks if they're having marital problems, and this is where Tyson walked off. I like the promo.
It was okay.
It was nice character development.
It was nice character development. I'm just not sure.
Okay.
I really wanna like or hate TJ. I just have a hard time with it.
Because Canadians supposedly are nice people. So it's hard to hate Canadians.
It is hard to hate Canadians. So it's just like, I want to hate you, but I can't.
Especially when you watch Total Divas.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just, it's hard.
It is.
So, right now I'm really just not digging TJ's character at all or anything he did. But up next, I can talk about something I did dig, which was Sami Zayn versus Justin Gabriel.
Good match. Really good match.
I want more of this.
We had Zayn in control for a little bit. Gabriel then took control, had some nice forearm shots, back and forth they went. Gabriel took Zayn off his feet with a nice spin kick. Zayn got out of a headlock with a nice belly-to-belly, but got taken right back down. Gabriel was frustrated because he just couldn't keep the man down. Zayn gets back in the match, quickens the pace, hit a nice blue thunderbomb, long two count, hit an exploder suplex into the corner, two count. Went for a kick, Gabriel missed, hit a thrust kick off out of the corner, which was nice, went to a two count. Gabriel hit a nice move, I don't even know what name it was, but basically drove his neck and head into the knee of Gabriel. Gabriel for Zayn. Gabriel went for hit the springboard moonsault, two count. Zayn popped out of the corner. Gabriel caught him on the top rope. Zayn goes for a superplex, gets blocked. Both men fight on the ropes. Zayn gets knocked down. Gabriel took a dive. Zayn ducked. Hit the connected with his submission. Gabriel tapped out. Sami Zayn is your winner.
And well, TJ, wasn't you happy about that? And neither was Justin Gabriel. And it seems Justin Gabriel isn't the gracious winner he made himself out to be. Because after the match, Gabriel and TJ attacked Zayn. They beat him down, only to be run off by your NXT champion, Adrian Neville.
Good stuff. Looks like I hope we get a tag match, Neville and Zayn versus Gabriel and Kidd. That would be really good.
Yeah, so very curious to see how this progresses. Fantastic performance by Gabriel and Zayn. I mean, honestly, you can't ask for much better than that.
No, I like this show for a couple reasons.
Okay.
We got a couple squash matches, and then we had two really long matches.
And I like that one of them was the women's.
One of them was women's, one of them was the men's. I liked it. I liked that they gave established a couple characters, and they had two really good competitive matches. I like this. Good show. Good way to use everything. We've been talking. Don't do all squash matches. Give them some time. They did a 50-50 trade-off. Squash match and two good matches. I like that.
I would agree with that.
I like that. Good stuff.
So, well done, NXT. Bravo.
Bravo.
Looking forward to next week. But on that note, I say we take our third and final break of the evening, a quick break, y'all. And when we come back, we're going to be having Tweet of the Week. And, of course, we're going to be doing our review of Money in the Bank. So you don't want to miss that. So you're listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we will be right back.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night, live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Hey, Wild Talk Radio, this is New York Times bestselling author Brian Shield.
The greatest professional athlete in the world today. Look at this. He's having a star. I don't believe it.
And my new book, 30 Years of WrestleMania, is coming out September 15th.
The spectacle that is WrestleMania. This is it.
Pre-order it now wherever books are sold.
Here we go. Once in a lifetime.
Out and about when your favorite WTR program is on the air? Don't worry, we've got you covered. You can listen to WTR on the go with TuneIn Radio. Just download the TuneIn Radio app for your Android or iPhone, iPad or tablet, and search for Wild Talk Radio Network. Best of all, it's free. What are you waiting for? Download the TuneIn Radio app today. Tune in to WTR, wherever you are.
You think you know me.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge. You're listening to Wild Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you, of course, by our friends over at Wrestling Figure Wednesdays. Sorry, YouTube.com/MBG1211 for all your action figure needs. And I'm no longer jealous, well, I'm semi-jealous, because I have picked up the Bray Wyatt Elite figure, and it is awesome. So now I just have to find Rowan and Harper, but, well, I can find them. No problem. But until then, I say we do Tweet of the Week.
Well, I used to be the kind of person spending time on MySpace until the spammers ended up taking over my place, and I was so bitter until I found Twitter. Ooh, a place where you can go ahead and write what you're feeling. 140 characters or less is what you're given. My addiction starts to climb. I go to refresh my timeline, 'cause I won't stop tweeting. No more, no more. It cannot wait, I'm sure.
Alright, you're up first.
I'm up first, so again, the Twitter that gives me life, DiGiorno Pizza. Hey, John Cena, you can't see me either unless you turn on the oven light. I guess I forgot about that. Hashtag raw.
Yeah.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie. Wait, that's not the moon. It's a Seth Rollins curb stomp. What is the Russian word for pizza? Probably not Rusev. Otherwise, people would love him, which they obviously don't. If Bray Wyatt doesn't hide a slice of pizza under that adorable hat of his, then I have lost all respect for him.
That would kind of get all messy. And sweaty. You don't want sweaty pizza.
Yeah, sweaty pizza would be bad. It takes longer for delivery pizza to show up than it did for Chris Jericho to come back. I think Summer Rae and Dolph Ziggler just tried to share a slice of pizza but forgot the pizza.
Okay.
How can you not like Goldust and Stardust? They literally look like pizza crust dipped in garlic butter.
No, they don't.
That's all I got.
Rockstar Spud. I hit Tommy Dreamer with a microphone. I'm hardcore.
Oh, Spud.
Hashtag rejected theme park rides. Broke back Splash Mountain. Dolph Ziggler's. Me and your father need Space Mountain. Baby on board bumper cars. The TSA security lines. D-cops. Dolph Ziggler. Gal who rolled her eyes and sighed loudly when I held the door for you. It's clear why there wasn't a date to hold it. Amy Fadul. So the USMNT, United States Men's National Team, advances with win/draw versus Germany or loss versus Portugal/Ghana, draw or loss and win tiebreaker versus Portugal Ghana winner. Hashtag I believe. Well, we tried. Ryan Lawrence goes, is it weird that when I see the letters MNT at the end of a hashtag, I think people are talking about Mutant Ninja Turtles? The reply was, of course not. It's weird not to. Hashtag Donatello forever. DiGiorno Pizza. Wow. Pizza equals 22 minutes to cook. CM Punk equals 7 world titles. Add those together, what do you get? Doesn't matter, he's not coming back. WWE Creative-ish. The Bray Wyatt era is something fans can believe in. when Vicky gets her hair colored, she asks for the Seth Rollins. That was from Andrew Goldstein. ProWrestling.net. I speak loser if anyone needs an interpreter. Will Wheaton for hashtag ruin a video game character. Donkey Dick. The fake ESPN. Breaking. FIFA charges Luis Sousa, or some, whoever that guy was, with biting. Could face up to 2 years in kennel. Davey Richards, very disappointed that Mr. Ken Anderson and TNA Gunner missed 3 a.m. Bible study and squat session. Hashtag committed. Ken Anderson replied, tomorrow morning we can do Skype squat session / Bible study. Hashtag committed. Dolph Ziggler, halfway through, 0-0, bite-wise. Hashtag U.S. Men's National Team. Hashtag World Cup. Betty Freakin' White, Shia LaBeouf was arrested. Guess they finally got him for the Indiana Jones movie. Dolph Ziggler was asked the question for Ask the Heel. What is one book you would bring with you to a desert island? Raft Making for Dummies. That was smart. tips on picking up the ladies. Ladies, he was asked. Lift with your legs, not your back. Someone asked Lance Storm, thoughts on James Storm? Storm replied, Bob liked him best. Screw him.
Oh, God.
CM Punk tweeted, it ain't white boy day, is it? At Heyman Hustle. Heyman Hustle replied, no, CM Punk. It ain't white boy day. Seth Mates, when your number of title reigns is twice the age if you're of your average wrestling average fan, something is off. There should have been an off, not an if. Ricardo Rodriguez, Rusev with Lana versus Swagger with Coulter, Now if Lana dresses as Coulter, that would be great, LOL.
No, because then everything would be covered up, and that's just not okay.
It'd be funny, but it wouldn't be okay. Betty Freakin' White, to find out your porn star name, tweet the name of the secret you grew up on. Tweet the name of the street you grew up on, your first pet's name, and your bank PIN number. That's the key. Fake Sports Center, the last time shots were 20-3, Johnny Manziel was drinking with Justin Bieber. Jeff Ross, this is so exciting for 5 minutes every 4 years. Hashtag World Cup. Tom Brady's ego. We are still 48-0 in Super Bowls, though. Breaking from Not Sports Center. Breaking, the USA has reached a 4-year agreement to return to hating soccer again. Hashtag World Cup.
Damn right.
Seth Mates. Rumors are that John Laurinaitis released the wrong two-legged diva. Hashtag oops. That's Tweet of the Week.
Ouch. Well, moving on from that, I say we get all into Money, Money, Money in the Bank, which was this past Sunday.
And the kickoff had Daniel Bryan on the show.
And it did.
He came back, told us, he had some, you know, well, since I have the sounder here.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
That the strength hasn't come back to his arm, and there's talk of another surgery, and then it was asked who the biggest threats to win the title are Cena, Randy Orton, and Roman Reigns. He felt disrespected when he was stripped because he was never told, authorities never actually called, which was kind of weird. He never called him to tell him he was stripped. But then, Lindsay, things got interesting.
You know, maybe Brian just didn't believe.
Daniel, hey buddy, I've been listening to everything you had to say backstage, and I understand you can't compete tonight. Gosh, that's got to be such a pain in the neck.
Oh, Bo. Anyway.
But listen, life isn't about the destination. It's about the journey. And no, you might not be able to climb that ladder tonight. But you can still climb the ladder of life and make your way back to the top.
I think this is the point where Brian
all you have to do
shit.
Yeah.
Is believe.
That was awesome.
Bo, I appreciate your concern, I really do, but it feels to me like you're acting like a Bo-ner.
And this would be the moment where Bo Dallas' soul died a little.
A little bit.
That was awesome.
And I think I pretty much speak for everyone here. When I say this, Bo, leave.
Hey, that's not the way you say it.
No, that was good.
It's not believable.
Poor Bo. At least he got on the show.
At least he got on the show. I liked it. Good stuff on Bo Dallas.
It was a good use of Bo Dallas. It lightened the moment just a little bit because, you know, obviously that is bad news, and the fact that Dan O'Brien is still suffering. He may have to have another surgery, which is going to lengthen out his time away from the ring, which obviously had an impact on the show because, well, WWE does need to move forward. So that is unfortunate. I hope Brian gets better. I hope he comes back.
But
I'd hate to think that he's done.
I don't think he'll be done, but if he has to go on another neck surgery, it could be one of those 6 months to a year type surgeries, which are never, ever, ever good.
No, never, ever good. So best of luck to Brian. Hope he feels better. But we're going to move on to our opening contest of Money in the Bank. And good God, this was a fantastic opener. You had Luke Harper and Eric Rowan of the Wyatt family taking on the Usos for the WWE Tag Team titles.
Yeah. You had new music for the Wyatts again.
Which I don't like. Oh. I'm sorry. No. Get rid of the rock theme. Get rid of it now. Doesn't fit. Doesn't work. Get rid of it, please.
There went back and forth early. There was a nice drop kick by Luke. The Wyatts had a nice double team with Luke standing on the foot of one of the Usos, allowing Rowan to just kick him in the fucking head. Double team with an Uso doing a drop kick into a roll up, which was nice. One of the Usos went flying, does a flying forearm off the barricade. It's like, ow. Rowan shoves an Uso off the top rope into a barricade. That's another ow. These guys were hard hitting. Harper ran over Uso. I wrote in my notes, Harper ran over Jey Uso on the outside, because he actually legit ran him over like a clothesline. Harper, again, likes to step on the foot of an Uso. Rowan brought out the claw, tossed Jey Uso around the ring a little bit. This is where Lindsay pointed out, and then we noticed, hey, look, there's a ravishing Rowan sign in the crowd.
And Harper is hot.
And Harper's
I think that was actually Lynestra from Tumblr who had that, or it was somebody from Tumblr. I'm not sure who it was, but whoever it was.
Well done. Then.
Bravo.
Then, Hot Harper took Jimmy to the outside, which meant Jay couldn't. Took out Jimmy, which meant Jay couldn't tag in, and then laid him out with a big boot. Jimmy Uso got the hot tag at one point, and started hitting some Samoan drops on both Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. Does a nice corkscrew from the top rope for a two count. Hit a super kick for a two count. Jey Uso gets caught by Rowan. Jimmy dives to the outside onto both men. The Wyatts go for a double team. Jey makes a save. Rolls up Harper for a two count. A sit out powerbomb by Harper. Two count. Rowan had Jey distracted. Harper dives out onto Jey. There's a double huge chokeslam-like spot, but it wasn't actually a chokeslam. A long two count. Rowan splashed Uso in the corner. Harper is down. Rowan goes to the top rope. And this is where things got bad. We should mention there was another spot in there where they were distracted on the outside, and Harper dove out there twice, which was nice. But anyway, Rowan goes to the top rope, which he
this
should.
Is what happens when Eric is unsupervised.
He looked over, and there was no Brian. And he's like, okay, I'm on my own. I can do this. I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to go to the top rope. So he goes to the top rope, got caught on the top rope by Jimmy Uso. Jimmy climbs up, tries to superplex, can't get the big man over. He got knocked down. Both Usos get up on the ropes. Double superplex on Eric Rowan. Two splashes later, you're still tag team champions, the Usos.
I'm not even mad, because this was such a great match.
It was.
They told a great story. It was hard-hitting. It was really good. You saw Harper pulling moves you would never think Harper could do.
No, you really couldn't. You wouldn't think.
When he did the flip over the top rope and landed on one of the Usos, it's like, where the hell did that come from?
Man,
you had Eric getting adventurous as well. I mean, it's just, yeah, this was clearly this was their breakout match, at least for Luke. This was basically, hey, look at what I can do, because he knew people were watching.
And this was a really great opener.
This was a fantastic opener. The crowd was super into it. And yeah, I can't even be mad that the Wyatts lost, because it was such a great, great match. I just want more like this.
Yeah.
It's like the bar has been set, boys. Now you gotta hit that every time. I hope you realize that.
Yeah.
But after the match, we had Cole talking about the former members of the Shield. We get a backstage promo from one Dean Ambrose, where he's talking about Seth Rollins, and basically he says that Daddy is going to be mad at Rollins when he loses tonight.
Case or face? Case or face?
Face. Why not both?
Why not both?
Yes.
Divas Championship is on the line in our next contest, Paige versus Naomi. I was happy they were in this spot.
I was happy they were in this spot, but I felt kind of bad staying to follow that opener, because damn, that was
a good opener, yeah. Both women grappled to start, and they grappled and rolled to the outside and continued to roll around, throwing each other around a little bit outside. Both went for a dropkick at the same time, both missed. Naomi bailed to the outside and yanked Paige out of the ring. Naomi with a nice dive outside on the Paige.
Mm-hmm.
She hit a cross body, but Paige rolled through for a two count. Back and forth they went. Naomi hit a modified, locked in the modified surfboard, which I like. Then turned it into a pin, which was nice. She goes to the top rope, gets caught. Paige gets to get her, but both women awkwardly fall off to the outside. Both women get back in at 8. Paige rolls out of the backside, hit her with a hard kick. Paige locks in the stump puller, which was nice, unique. Naomi made her comeback, including a nice drop kick and a kick up. Naomi hit the rear view at 2 count. Split leg moonsault. Paige got the knees up. Paige went for the PTO, but got turned into a small package 2 count. Naomi went for her reverse DDT, but Paige countered with, I guess, a spike DDT. And you're winner, and still Divas champion at this point, Paige.
Great match. Very solid match.
Yes.
After this, you had Damian Sandow come out as Paul Revere, and he looked very dashing. Basically, he ripped on Boston and said that, you know, they would always live in the shadow of New York. And he opened it, by the way, by saying the Half-Wits are coming, which was awesome. Adam Rose and his robots then came out, and Rose said that Boston is the place to party. He tells Sandow not to be a lemon, but to be a rosebud. Sandow charges, and Rose backdrops him onto the floor in front of all the rosebuds. They all laugh at him. The fans began humming Rose's theme as we get ready to go. Sandow then got some offense in early. He kept control, and he dropped the elbow for the 2 count.
Hold on. The elbow is coming.
Rose makes a big comeback, but Sandow runs him over with a clothesline. Sandow then nailed his finisher for a close 2 count. But then Sandow missed a springboard finisher, and Rose nails him with his finisher, the party foul, for the victory. So your winner, Adam Rose.
We then had the Money in the Bank competitors talk. Yeah, the standout match was just, yeah, nothing really much to say about it. It was the match.
It was there.
The competitors talked. Seth Rollins was reading his script. So were most of them. And then we had Money in the Bank contract. And this is where the pay-per-view got interesting for me and Lindsay, because this is where we started a phone call.
Yes. Yes, it was.
All right. Actually, it started a little bit into this match, actually, because I wrote things down on my notes. All right, Dean goes right after Seth to start the sale. Oh, we should say, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, RVD, Swagger, and Kingston. This matchup, Dean goes right after Seth. They brawl around the ringside. Swagger had a ladder. Kofi ran up it onto RVD. But in my notes, I go, Swagger had a ladder. Kofi ran up it, in parentheses, damn you, Lindsay, for making me laugh. Had to stop taking notes for a second, and I was laughing. And landed on Rob Van Dam. That's when you went with Dean.
No, it's Dean.
There you go. Dean pushes the ladder over with Kofi on it. He landed on top rope, which was nice, and sprung down on the Swagger. And RVD on the outside, which was a really nice spot. Ambrose has the ladder leaned up in the corner. Tries to put Rollins on it. Back and forth they went. Reverse a double underhook suplex onto the ladder. Dean and Swagger battle back and forth a little bit, trying to pull each other off the ladder. Kofi and Dolph race up the ladder. Rollins slid a ladder in between the ladders, hitting Kofi and Dolph. RVD with a rolling thunder on a ladder, which was wedged into the bottom rope on the Rollins, which was nice.
Ow.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that through this match.
Yeah.
Ow.
Yeah.
Ow.
Frog splash, which was nice. Swagger hits the was hitting people ladder. Swagger climbs up the ladder by the corner, pulls RVD off the ladder, which we were going, Swagger, no, Swagger, no, don't get near the ladder, Swagger.
Yeah, I kept yelling at Swagger. It's just like, get in the corner and stay in the corner.
Yeah, RVD knocks Swagger off the ladder. RVD goes to fly, stops RVD, Rollins stops RVD, rather. RVD suplex, attempt, block. Swagger gets up, goes, hit powerbomb by Swagger off the ladder to RVD. He's like, ow. Then Dean climbs up and does a superplex by Dean Ambrose to Seth Rollins, taking both men off the ladder. Dean basically bounced.
Yeah, he did.
That was, then when they showed the replay of him bouncing, it was like, oh my god.
Yeah, it looked like it hurt. Just a little. I mean, he bounced and he did a complete 360, or 180, I should say, where he basically just flipped over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the spots of the night, and it looked like it hurt like a bitch.
Ziggler with drop kicks and kicks too, with the ladder into Dean. Swagger bomb with the ladder on a Kofi. Swagger goes to climb the ladder. RVD stops him. Dean fights with Swagger. Dean and Seth both climb the ladder again, brawling at the top. Dean knocks Rollins off the ladder. Swagger gets nailed with a DDT. Rollins climbs the ladder, pushes him over. Pushes Dean off. Medics are checking on Dean at this point. He's forced out of the match. Crowd goes boo. RVD stops Rollins on the top rope. Kofi then makes a bridge with the ladder. RVD falls off the ladder and holds his leg, which was like, oh my god, he didn't hurt himself, did he? Apparently he was alright. Rollins goes for a powerbomb, but is backdropped onto the ladder. Now this is a spot where, okay, it's a simple backdrop onto the ladder. No.
Because the ladder moved.
The ladder moved, then Dean went, Rollins went, boop, 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 boing, down the ladder. Ow.
Yeah, there was a lot of ow in this match.
Kofi grabbed the ladder. Ziggler stopped him. Ziggler was clearing house. Zigzag on the ladder to Kofi Kingston. Ziggler's climbing. Swagger gets back up, puts an ankle lock on Ziggler. He's trying to climb up while in the ankle lock, which was unique. Ziggler finally gets a free, kicks him in the head as Lindsay was screaming, kick him in the head. Kick him in the head. What do you do? You kick them in the head.
They listen.
Ziggler gets close. Rollins stops him with a chair to the ankle. Rollins then begins to climb, and again, keyword, there was a chair brought in. Dean comes back, and grabs a chair and nails Rollins with it multiple times. Dean is now racing to the top of the ladder. He gets to the top. It's Kane. Kane pulls Ambrose off the ladder. Chokeslam. Tombstone. Rollins is okay. Rollins climbs the ladder. Kane's there holding. Your winner, Seth Rollins.
It was the obvious choice, and honestly, it was a good choice. Again, this was a great, great match.
Great match. This was the match of the closest, I would say match of the night, second only to the tag match.
At this point, yeah, this was second only to the tag match, because again, that tag match was just really, really good. This was a great match as well. It had a lot of really wonderful spots in it. They all try to kill each other, which, you know, I have to applaud. Thank you so much for doing all that for us. But yeah, this was great. After the match, you had them showing the replays of Rollins celebrating and all the bumps. And basically, as Rollins is going out, Triple H and Stephanie come out. They're clapping and celebrating. They're very happy because obviously they've gone their way. You know, a plan is coming together. They raise Rollins' arms and, you know, briefcase in victory. Backstage, Byron Saxton talked to Randy Orton and asked about tonight's match. Orton says that he has better chances than anyone at winning. He's asked about Rollins winning, and Orton says Rollins is a great competitor, but needed all the help he could get. Well, he won't need any help.
Shots fired.
Somebody's jealous. After this, we have the Dust Brothers taking on Rybacksel.
Curtis Axel singlet, just no.
Yeah, no. Just no. No. This was a good match. It was a solid match. And again, they had to follow the Money in the Bank match, so I feel kind of bad for them.
Yeah.
And you had Stardust and Goldust pick up the victory. After the match, Axel attacked Stardust and laid him out, but Goldust ran in and, you know, both of them dropped them with a double team move, and then they did their pose and some other odd stuff to end it.
Yeah, the finish was Stardust escaped the Shell Shock, which I couldn't remember for the life of me the name of the move. Stardust then eventually rolled up Axel for the win. I really couldn't remember it. I just couldn't. Lindsay was like, heard me. I was like, I can't remember this name for the life of me.
Yeah. It was like, what's the name of Ryback's finishing move? I don't know.
She was no help.
Yeah, I couldn't remember it, honestly. It's been so long since I've even heard the name, so it's like, yeah, I don't remember, dude. Sorry. But after this, we got a better look at the Summer Rae, Layla, and Fandango love triangle. Byron Saxton was again backstage with Fandango, who, you know, was in his sparkly ref gear. See, he got his bedazzler out for this.
He did.
Saxton asks how he can, you know, call this match right down the middle. Layla appears and says he can't because he's in love with her. Summer Rae also appears and says no, Fandango loves her. Summer flaunts her legs. Layla flaunts her breasts. They start ripping it at each other, and Fandango sends them off to the ring.
The one thing you forgot to mention, Fandango loves triangles.
Yes, he does. Quote of the night, Fandango loves triangles. That was amazing. After this, we see Rusev versus Big E.
Rusev got knocked to the outside early. Big E goes for a spear. Rusev stopped him with a hard kick to the head. Rusev was trying to choke out Big E. Rusev charged in and got laid out by Big E. This was actually a fully competitive match. Big E got actually a lot of offense in. He hit the belly-to-belly suplex on him, hit the spear to Rusev to the outside. Big USA chance. Big E went for the pin, long two count. He pulled the straps down. Big E's ready to roll. He's ready to hit the big ending. No. Rusev rolls to the outside, kicks Big E in the head, and then it was Rusev crush time. Rusev locked in the accolade for the victory. Good, solid match. Best Rusev match to date.
Better than I expected it to be.
It was.
Definitely will say that. better than I expected it to be. After the match, you had Rusev refusing to break the hold until Lana came in and told him to let him go. We also get replays as they celebrate with a large Russian flag that dropped down. After this, we see the Bell Twins are backstage. Bree's back. Stephanie walks up and asks Nikki why Bree is here.
What is she doing here? Do you hear it? Do you hear a gnat buzzing?
Yes, what is she doing here? Bree goes on to speak, but Stephanie cuts her off. Bree ends up showing her new favorite video on her phone, which is amazing quality.
Amazing quality that we all got to see.
Yeah, which is basically the video of Stephanie getting slapped on Raw. Stephanie, you know, is not going to have it from Bree and has her escorted out by security. So, yeah, they're building Stephanie versus Bree. Kind of can't wait for that.
Yeah. Security has to throw Bree out. Security went, Miss Bella?
Yes.
It's not Miss Bella, though. It's Miss Danielson. Throw this person out. She made sure to say that and make sure that your sister is gone. Steph said to Nikki.
So, no love lost there. After this, we got Summer Rae versus Layla. I should note that I really, really liked that there were two women's matches on this show.
And because we don't have time to get into it, there's a lot of women wrestling storylines going on right now in WWE. I think there's like four of them.
I'm okay with this. I'm totally okay with
think
this.
Think about
this
it. You have the AJ Page one, Cameron Naomi, Summer Rae and
Layla.
Yeah, there's three right there. You have Lana's involved in one, so there's another one.
Alicia Fox.
A lot of focus right now. A lot of focus on the women.
I'm okay with this. Totally okay with this. Basically, this was kind of short and sweet. Layla and Summer brawled for a little bit. They went back and forth. Layla worked Summer's legs a lot.
She put in the Indian deathlock, and which they called the Native American deathlock. Because, you know, it got to be politically correct these days. Layla kicked Summer Rae in the head. One. Summer cried.
Yeah. Layla ended up picking up the victory, and then after the match, Fandango and Layla made out as Fandango's music hit, followed by the Laycool music.
Oops.
They leave together and dance to the back as Summer cries in the ring. Yeah, they were having a lot of production issues. There was a delay in music. They were playing the wrong music. So I wonder if somebody else was behind the wheel. I don't know, but yeah, this was... They were having issues with their sound cues Sunday night.
Yeah, they were.
After this, you get your main event of the evening, which is the ladder match for the vacant WWE World Heavyweight title with Sheamus, Bray Wyatt, Alberto Del Rio, Cesaro, John Cena, Randy Orton, Roman Reigns, and Kane all vying for that title.
Lights, pretty, pretty lights.
Oh my God, the lights. Bray, we should know, Bray and the boys are over.
Oh, yeah. Alright, everyone brawled, everyone paired off to brawl. Kane was the first one to get a ladder, got drop kicked into him. There was a tug of war between Cesaro and Del Rio with the ladder, and this is where it went, Bray Wyatt went, hey boys, here I come. Splash. The ladder into them.
Oh. This is the point where I started yelling at the computer, damn it, Bray, get in a corner and stay there.
Bray drives the ladder into both guys. Bray drives Cena into a ladder. Roman and Bray had a stare down a little bit. Sheamus and Kane brawled. Roman and Sheamus have ladders. They crushed Kane in the middle. Kane went squash. And this is where JBL said, Sheamus doesn't have as big of a ladder as Roman.
Oh dear.
Kane shoves everyone off a ladder. Kane leans everyone out, chokes on Cena and Del Rio. Kane forces Orton up by the throat, tells him, yeah, come on, let's go. And then Roman shoves Kane into a ladder. Orton falls off. Roman climbs. Bray stops him. Cena spins Bray into a powerbomb. Five knuckle shuffle was stopped by an uppercut by Cesaro, which was a nice spot. Sheamus and Cesaro brawl on a ladder. Bray then does his spider walk.
Yes, which Paul Heyman's face to Bray Wyatt's firewalk was absolutely priceless.
Mm-hmm.
He was like looking at him like, seriously, the fuck is going on?
The ladder, and then he moves the ladder. Sheamus and Cesaro hanging from the belts. Sheamus eventually falls. So does Cesaro. We notice Orton is cut open at this point. The ladder is bridged between the ring and the table on the outside. Orton sweeps the leg of Sheamus. It lands on the bridge ladder, which is ow. And then he did a DDT off the ladder, bridge ladder by Orton. So we now have the tall one. We realize that the ladder is as tall as the belts. We have four guys on the ladder. Everyone is trying to climb. Del Rio goes for an enziguri. Kane ducks. Lindsay goes. Ha ha.
Yeah, I laughed.
And I wrote that in my notes. Lindsay went ha ha. Sheamus clears house. Bro kick to Cena. You can't see me, fella. Cesaro bridges the ladder. Cesaro and Sheamus brawl on the big ladder. Del Rio pushes the ladder through. Rowan lifts the ladder up. Cesaro is hanging from the ladder. Sheamus is on top of the ladder, which, again, using physics and geometry and stuff like that for the ladder. It's on a tilt. So they're tilted on the ladder. They're fighting. Cena then pushes it upright. Bray slams Cena onto a ladder. Oh, Kane throws Bray into a ladder. So much for the teamwork. Roman then dives through a ladder with a spear. Superman punch to Orton. Bray gets bounced off the announce table. Dropkick onto the table by Roman. Spear to Cesaro. Roman and Cena face to face. The crowd sort of erupt. Slugfest. Cena goes for an AA. Roman spears Cena. Steph says, Kane. Roman starts to climb. Orton stops Roman. Brackbreaker off the ladder. Ow. Steph applauds that, though. Orton begins to climb. Bray stops Orton's sister Abigail, which was nice. Then Del Rio came and kicked Bray in the head. Del Rio started to climb. Sheamus shoves Del Rio off the ladder. Bro kick, fella. Sheamus begins to climb. Cesaro yanks him off into a nice uppercut and then a neutralizer. Orton stops Cesaro, swings him off into an RKO, which was really nice. Roman stops Orton. Oh, Orton and Roman fight. The cut reopens. Kane stops Roman with a chokeslam. Kane holds the ladder for Orton. Cena goes for the AA to Kane. Cena then hits AA to Orton. Cena climbs ladder. Cena wins. Authority not happy. John Cena is called the greatest champion in WWE history.
I don't know about that, but it makes him a 15-time champion, which is quite an accomplishment for someone. But, you know, and honestly, this was the choice everybody was kind of expecting. It wasn't really a great shock. We all had that person we wanted to win, Bray Wyatt. And then we have the person that we knew was going to win, which was John Cena. And it honestly makes sense because they're going to move forward with Cena as champion. They're going to feed Cena to Brock. And out of everybody in that match, it really made the most sense to feed Cena to Brock because you've had Brock defeat the streak. He really shouldn't lose from here on out because he did that, because it's such a monumental achievement, because it was something that literally, if you look at the names of people on that list who could not do it, and you have Brock Lesnar be the one that beat it, that makes him pretty much better than everybody on that list, including Triple H and Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. Not to mention the countless others. So it's something of, you really shouldn't have Brock lose again. And Cena's honestly a person that can take a loss and be okay. It's not going to hurt him. Oh, hell. But it won't hurt him.
Right.
So, you know, honestly, I'm really not even mad about it. I was a little disappointed, but with the SummerSlam stuff getting leaked early, it makes sense to me that Cena and Brock are going, and also based off of what happened on Monday night with Bray and Jericho, I'm really actually very happy with the direction of where they're going with this.
Yeah. The Bray went 4-3. Just so everyone knows.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Everyone, one person went 5-2. The majority of everyone else who picked went 4-3.
Not surprising.
So
I think a lot of people picked the Wyatts to win, and that was honestly the most shocking finish, is the fact that the Wyatts did not win. Because everybody was expecting Luke and Eric to pick up those titles, and they didn't do it.
There was two people, minus Ace, who picked the Wyatt family, who picked the Usos. Tim and Rob picked the Usos. Everyone else picked the Wyatts. So there you go.
There you go, but... You know, overall, what was your opinion of the pay-per-view?
I liked it. Again, I said this Sunday, and I'll say it again. Three straight months, well, I guess four straight months, including WrestleMania. But I'm not going to include that, because WrestleMania is always good. For Extreme Rules, Payback, and now Money in the Bank, this network era is pretty good.
I would agree with that. I think it wasn't as strong as some of the other ones that they've done, but they delivered some really good quality matches. And the matches that counted, delivered. And that's the thing. Is all the matches that counted, all the matches that were put out, delivered.
Great.
You know, it's some of the unadvertised stuff, it wasn't really as good, but you know what, it's like, the tag match was phenomenal. The two Money in the Bank matches were great. You had a great Divas match, or you actually should have, I should say we had two great Divas matches on that card. Which is incredible. So, you know, overall, I would give this a solid B.
I'm with you. A solid B. It was a really good show. Very enjoyable.
And, you know, I'm thinking Battleground will probably be a lot of repeats. Since they have such a short amount of time.
Well, we're getting a Battle Royal. We're getting a four-way for the title. And you never know what else happens. Should be a fun
tag titles. Please tag titles.
Please tag titles. Should be a fun show, and we'll break it down as we get there, because we're 2.5 weeks out at this point.
At this point, yeah. So we'll start seeing that all come together here in the next few weeks. But on that note, I say we get out of here.
I'm with you. So I guess I got a shill now.
Yeah, you got a shill.
Anyone know a midget?
I know one, but she wouldn't do it.
Anyone know a midget? We need a midget for Saturday. Anyone got a midget? Got a midget? Know a midget? Know a friend who knows a midget? Contact us. media@wildtalkradio.com. We need a midget. Because it's Subway's 40th birthday. Spectacular this Saturday night on CB Radio. Yeah, he's turning 40 and it's going to be the first time on the show. Someone turns 40. God, he's old.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're gonna have stuff happen and stuff. Tune in. You never know what happens. CB Radio Midnight is CB Radio on CB Radio WTR on Twitter and Facebook.com. So cigarette butts and madness. We already have three blame robs already. So it's like, oh God. Sunday is WTR Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Recapping the week in pro wrestling at WTR Sunday night and Facebook.com. So Wrestle Talk Radio Monday Night Raw post show right after Monday Night Raw, 11:10-ish Eastern. Myself and Lindsay will recap Monday Night Raw. We'll be back next Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, the new start time for The Rack. Live right here at WildTalkRadio.com, RackRadioShow.com. Follow the show on Twitter at WTR, _Rack, and Facebook.com/WTRTheRack. Follow me on Twitter at WildTalkRadio and Facebook.com/WildTalkRadioNetwork. Thanks. Yeah. That's it.
By the way, if anybody knows how to, like, liquidate or liquefy, vaporize mosquitoes, contact me, media@wildtalkradio.com. But if you just want to follow me on Twitter, it's @LinsWard, LNSWARD. No, I'm serious, dude. I've been back a week and I'm like already covered in bug bites. It's ridiculous.
I hate them.
I hate mosquitoes. My legs have red splotches all over them. Anyway, follow me on Twitter, @LinsWard, LNSWARD. You can go to my website, psychwarddesigns.com. Check that out. If you'd like to buy my artwork, at least what's available or what's left up, you can go to my Redbubble store. Just click on the Contact Us section of my website. Click the link to redbubble.com, and it will take you to my store. I used to have a lot more artwork available for sale, but, well, WWE got a little mad at me. So, It has been taken down, but I'm looking into seeing what I can potentially put up. But if you'd like to view the artwork that has been removed, you can go to behance.net/Lynn's Ward. Check it out. It is not available for sale there, but it is at least available for your viewing pleasure. And of course, visit our fine sponsors, PWMania.com, TeamAsylum.com, The Haven for TMA fans, and of course, Wrestling Figure Wednesdays, YouTube.com/MBG1211. So for Rock, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we will see you next week. Bye! Christmas stockings are shocking. Fine women anywhere. Naughty denim and leather. Call it tricking, whatever. Sunday get better. I'm one smart cookie. The vet that smacks rookies. My socks on top. Your checks bounce while mine boogie. Wrist, I must rock it. Chick, stop it. I knock it. Cash looks like I got a gang of fists in my pocket. Fist in my pocket. Fist in my pocket. Here comes the money. Money.